And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
Afraid here on Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUD full studios of Freedoms with an S, Freedoms Phoenix, dot cool. See, not a good day. Yeah, my rooster's got me out of Oh, you got a rooster. All right. Well, okay. He's got us. Let's tell you what happened. We have chickens, okay? Donna has, I don't know, probably 20-something chickens, and then she got another 15 or so that, you know, are about month and a half, and pretty soon we'll release them into the semi-wild here. And we're in kind of a, you know, it's a couple of acres, a place called Sunburst Farms up in Northwest Phoenix. It's been here since I can remember, probably 60s or something. It used to be out in the desert. And it's horse property. So it gives us some space to do some stuff. But the thing is that, you know, and we get some chickens, aquaponics and fish, and had goats, but they ate all my trees and, you know, next. But the, all them hens, ooh, they look nice to a nice rooster from somewhere around here. And he made, you know what, I'm going to stay over there. So I don't know where he came from. He seems kind of, you know, he's just maturing. But, man, he's all the time. And it's not so bad. He's out and, you know, far enough away. But I tell you, you know, he's got it good because we got purdy chickens, and he's so purdy. And he is a beautiful rooster, man. I just, one of those classic, I don't even know what kind you call them, but multicolored kind of, you see him on postage stamps. I mean, you know, so we'll let him hang. You know, he's so purdy. We're going to have, we have scheduled Dave Hodges in the first hour. Donna's not connecting with him. He said, wake up, Dave, wake up. But the he's going to be talking about Department of Homeland Security. He believes is positioning to secretly arrest American dissidents in preparation for World War III. So we got that going for us. You know, we'll talk about that. In the second hour, Jeff Berwick, you know, we're going to be talking about Anarcopulco, you know, going to, we're going to be leaving Monday. We'll be down there all next week and through the weekend, you know, it's a tough job. Somebody's got to do it. And, but big thing is a lot of these guys are people, you know, like I just talked to, Cody Wilson yesterday, you know, we were trying to schedule him and, you know, kind of wrap up our Satoshi roundtable thing, but they just scheduled and they got filled up when I got hold. Anyway, so we'll, you know, be talking to him down in Mexico this coming week, and then we'll be certain to have him on the week after. I'm pretty sure. Then we have Patrick Wood. Now, Patrick Wood, this is a very interesting story, and I'm going to, you know, we'll have him talk about his new book, Technocracy Rising.com. This is a website that he has for it, but this is, you know, it's calling it a national town hall on technocracy. And anyone that became an activist, you know, in the early, go and check it, maybe, in the early, since the 80s, you know, knew of this whole concept of they, them, those that want to rule us through technology. This has been a very, very, very interesting thing. And it's where all of the original ideas of the, God, what do you call them? It was Trilateral Commission. The Trilateral Commission was created at a Bilderberg thing. David Rockefeller hooked up with Zbigniew Brzezinski, and all of a sudden they had Japan, North America, and Europe kind of targeted as we're going to rule the world through whatever they're going to do. And when they started electing, and all the top cabinet positions, and everybody started becoming members of this, or were members of this group, it's kind of minimum job requirement, you could see that they were implementing policies and spending money on livestock control, which was us. And he discovered this in his 20s as he was doing financial research for Wall Street and buyouts and takeovers and all that. And he's doing this research financially. So we'll hear the story. And all of a sudden, he started seeing the pattern. All these same people kept popping up. Well, he met a Professor Sutton from the Hoover Institute, and they started comparing notes, and they wrote a book called Volume 1 and Volume 2. What was it? It was called Trilaterals Over Washington. So anybody that got involved in conspiracy or politics or anything, you had the John Birch Society or these kind of guys that go, oh, let me tell you a story. And it was always the trilateral this, trilateral that. Oh, you're a tinfoil hat wearer. And then all of a sudden, you know, when the internet comes, it's not a secret anymore. They got their own web page, and they're celebrating their 40th anniversary. And thank you for, letting us get away with all this and not reporting on some people in the press. And now you find out all the broadcast networks and their lead anchors and all that kind of stuff, CIA kind of, I mean, seriously, this is, so there's a sequel. And we're going to hear about that. Do we got Dave on? Dave, is that you?
That is me.
Dave, there you go. We missed you, man. Okay, I kind of prepped the audience real quick what we're going to talk about. Skip to the end. Department of Homeland Security is positioning to secretly arrest American dissidents in preparation for World War III. And I'm thinking, well, we got that going for us. So give us supporting evidence of this theory.
Well, for a number of years, my NSA sources have said that every American has a threat matrix score, and the specifics will vary from source to source, but essentially it's the same. And this is why they do the massive data mining on us to try to determine who's going to be naughty and who's going to be nice at the time of the critical hour. And as we rush towards World War III, which we're right now accepting in the name of revenge for Kayla Mueller's murder by ISIS, the American people, though, are going to grow weary of what's coming. We don't need 3 years to chase ISIS around the desert. We can obliterate that force in 3 days from the air because they're out in the open. And the American people are going to say, hell no. And there are going to be people like you and I speak up and say, we've had enough, and here's the fraud and deceit. Where are the weapons of mass destruction, so to speak? And this is when the arrests are going to start. What's the proof for it? Judge a man by what he does, not by what he says. There's a reason why Congress has passed the NDAA on two separate occasions, which allows them to unconstitutionally and illegally arrest people without due process. And when they have you, they can do anything they want with you because you're not allowed to have an attorney, you're not have charges brought against you, you don't get your day in court. So that's why I said they're preparing to secretly arrest. Now, sources from people like Steve Quayle and Doug Hagman, and I'm talking about people inside the agencies, are confirming what I'm saying right here, that they have their list in place. Most oftenly, the euphemism is the red list, but this is what's coming.
I remember when the, I think it was right when the Snowden documents were being released, and then it kind of went away. I was looking for it, and I couldn't find it. It went away, and I'm wondering if you remember about this. They were saying that there was a list of at least 3 million people that were top of the list of, they're the first to go to wherever, and I'm going, okay, why? And then you talk about this threat matrix thing. Explain that to me. I'm like, I would be really disappointed if I don't have a high number. I mean, I'm going, come on.
As you once told me, if you're going to be on the list, you better be on the top of the list.
I know, it's safer up there. So I'm just like, Well, it's not, I wouldn't say it's safer. It's just that it's more obvious when something happens. They go, yeah, right. Okay, but when we come back, Dave Hodges, we'll go ahead and pip his website and the things that he's doing, what he's been doing lately, and how he came to our attention on this issue. and share with you. We'll be right back.
This is Donna Hancock with Brad.
Yeah, I got a really bad connect. What? How are you communicating?
I'm on my cell.
Where at? In a wind tunnel?
I'm driving on the reconstructing 303 through to get onto Happy Valley.
Okay.
Hey, Ernie, I was sitting here with the phone on. That's why I called to check my messages. My phone did not ring. And so I called to check my messages thinking, what's going on? And Donna left me a message with a studio number. So that's how I got a hold of you.
Because she's so smart.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, okay, that's good. Do you know who Patrick Wood is?
Oh, yeah, we're friends.
You know, I have him on in the third hour, and we had him on. He did the Breakfast Club thing. Were you there when he did that?
I wasn't there, but he actually called me and asked me for the nature of the audience. What was he going to face?
Okay. Yeah. So my thing is, real quick, I'm trying to remember. As I remember it, he's like 20-something years old studying financial takeover for his job of something, and he starts seeing all the trilaterals popping up everywhere, and then they write that book. And then I'm wondering what he's been doing since then, and then he's got his new Technocracy Rising book that we're going to talk about. But I'm just like, okay, so what's he been doing in the meantime? Speaking? How do you know about him?
Well, yeah, I've actually been talking to him for a number of years. When I was fighting my property rights battle and we found out that the Yuma farmers were getting screwed the same way, he and I went out to Yuma for a day and spent the day with the Yuma Farm Bureau officers and toured the area and talked to them about what they were facing. And that was probably, 8 years ago. And I guess he discovered me because of articles on Freedom Speaks, and some people were sending the articles to him. And that's when we started a dialogue, and he's been on my show a number of times. He's been talking about technocracy and transhumanism for as long as I've known him, which is 7 or 8 years. By the way, you mentioned his book. That was really kind of my introduction to this whole thing. I read his book back in 1980, and then I went to try to research the trilaterals. There was nothing on him except for one little magazine article in the Atlantic Monthly accusing anyone who said there was a trilateral commission of being crazy.
Yeah, you're crazy right up until the guys get a webpage. I mean, and I'm the story as described by him, and then I had Richard Grove from Tragedy and Hope. Are you familiar with them?
I am. I don't know him.
We hooked him up to do the interview that he did with Bill Benny from the NSA. And if I could only get, I'm going, well, I know who he is. I'll hook you up, So they did their thing. So he's really happy. I go, I got another one for you. Patrick Wood. Oh, I've been trying to get, oh, that's great and wonderful. So he's hopefully going to be doing a piece with Patrick Wood, too, like he did Benny. And they do such a good job. I'm really glad to have him. One last thing I got to do. But and he does the research, and he knows all this stuff, and he's used a lot of him. So he knows who he is from a lot of the paths that he helped him navigate, and discovering all that he knows. So, and doing his brain thing and his connections and the software that he uses and so on. And I'm just going, it's all coming to pass now, and it makes it far less conspiratorial for you to say what you're saying. It's such a part of that puzzle. And they try and operate in secret, but I don't think it's so secret, and I'm wondering what their game plan is. So let's talk about it. Here we go.
Okay.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock, and we have Mr. Dave Hodges, The Common Sense Show. He does his own, the commonsenseshow.com. com. You know, Dave, go ahead and tell us about that first. You know, your work is, I mean, you, this is not your day job. I mean, there wasn't. I mean, you've been like a, you know, a coach and busy and teaching, doing something, you know, and then all of a sudden it starts to take over. And then I just found out in the break that you read Trilaterals Over Washington, the original books of our third hour guest, Patrick Wood, and that you know him and kind of, you know, he was reading some of your stuff on Freedom's Phoenix and such and hooked up, and you guys are all buddies. And then, of course, he calls you, Dave, hey, this Breakfast Club thing I'm going to, what kind of audience is this? And, I, you know, and then you talk to him. And it, so you guys know each other. So
we know each other well, yes.
So this is from your reading of his original book that he did with Professor Sutton, I think, from the Hoover Institute, and they started exposing what was going on. And what do you think that they were trying to tell us?
Well, I think they were trying to tell us that we live in an oligarchy, and that oligarchy was controlled at that time by the 63 living members of the Rockefeller dynasty. In fact, if I remember correctly, this goes so far back, but I think they said if the Rockefellers' collective wealth was a country at that time, they would have had the world's eighth largest GNP as a family. And what shocked me, and this is really what introduced me to the world of economics, what shocked me is it wasn't so much what Rockefeller, David Rockefeller, owned directly. It's what he owned through subsidiary holdings, interlocking boards of directorate. And at that time, it would have been the transportation industry, hard manufacturing, because we still had some back then, communications. They controlled everything. And I recall one time that I managed to wiggle my way on to a local radio station for a while in Denver. I said, I got some stuff here. I've been reading this book. I think you need to share with your listeners. And they gave me a half hour, and the people were just stunned. This just can't be true. No one can have this much wealth. And so Patrick and Anthony, who's now deceased, were right on top of the cutting edge of the New World Order and how they were taking over this country. And they talked about Trilateral Commission and how it was unconstitutional. They were making extra governmental decisions that would affect the everyday lives of Americans. I mean, these two were the pioneers and waking me up to the New World Order.
And what did they refer to it as then? I mean, it's just a secret society of we rule you people with the power to do it and the incentive and the motive. I mean, what did you call
it? They weren't conspiratorial. So, I got to remember, it's probably been 30 years since I've looked at the book. But they weren't conspiratorial. It was just very matter-of-fact. It was written like an academic white paper. And here are the facts. And here's where the facts lead, and then they give you their conclusions.
You know, it got to the point to where it, as time goes on, and you hear the speeches of these very people that this is about, it's from their own mouths. It's some kind of a code that they live by, or just their ego, or something that they are compelled to tell you what they're going to do before they do it. What's up with that?
I hear that all the time. You know, I'm not able to confirm that. But it does appear like they do that in movie themes, in books that come out that are popular, and in some of their own statements. And maybe just because they're so brazen, they don't think there's anything we can do about the current state of affairs. They just feel they can stay and do whatever they want with impunity. Or maybe there's some hidden satanic code, who knows, where they feel they got to tell us. That'd be a good question for you to ask Patrick, because he'd have his finger a little more on the pulse on that question than I would.
You know what? The impression, as I get older, that I get, it's like you deserve to be ruled by your betters because you led us, you know, and we feel comfortable doing it, especially after we told you how we're going to do it and who's doing it and, you know, and where. And if you're still wanting, okay, well, then you're dumb enough to be ruled. So I'm going, I get the impression that's kind of it until you start to resist and they go, oh, wait, you're not allowed to resist. So I'm just going, wow, this is, as they talk about all of the empire and how we're going to invade here and they have bases over there and so on, I go, yeah, well, we're under occupation now. I mean, what do you think America is? So you're the guy to tell this to. I was at a party recently, and there's someone that I know that is the head liaison from the Phoenix Police Department to the Fusion Center. And I go to him and I said, look, you know, what are you guys preparing for? I mean, seriously. And all you got, and all I can get is that, oh, you know, there's terrorists right here in River City, you know, and the terrorists that did some 9/11 something done, they like, you know, stayed here, vacationed here, something Arizona. Okay. So they're using whatever technology they can to be in chat rooms, to think that they think they're in a private conversation or encryption. It's all this, you know, stuff that they're looking for someone to say, and then they nurture it and build up an agent provocateur and entrapment of whatever. So this is going on constantly. Well, I'm going, as you are sitting there facing the terrorist, and you're sitting there, ooh, we're going to get some. There's this big, giant financial tsunami that's going to engulf everything. Are you guys preparing for that? I mean, is there some kind of, they even talking about what happens when the dollar is abandoned, when you have hyperinflation, or when you have super deflation first, or you do, you know, the collapse of, and everybody's pissed and hungry. I mean, is that even in it? No, not, don't, no. So I'm going, either he's not being forthright, or they're clueless, and I'm going, I'm not sure either one's good, you know? So I'm this preparation we have, is it really for the terrorist, or in the name of terrorists, they get this budget to be worried about us? You see my point?
Yeah, I do. I think the answer to your question lies in something called the MIAC report, which was put out by the Department of Homeland Security back in 08. You were considered to be a potential domestic terrorist if you're a Ron Paul supporter, Second Amendment supporter, Bible-believing Christian, and so forth. The DHS very clearly defined what they considered to be the new terrorist. It wasn't the foreign terrorists that drive flyer planes into the World Trade Center. It was people who supported the Constitution and were not likely to accept the new world order.
Is that, you know, there's one of the graphics here I want to, that you had Donna found, where is it? You know, one of the graphics, it has a bunch of sheep in a field, and it has a group of sheep, probably, I don't know, a dozen huddled up. And then you have the rancher, you know, at the end of the field in the fence or something there. One sheep is kind of out, and on the other side, there's the sheepdog. And it has this one sheep sitting there looking at the other crowd. He's going, hey, I'm telling you, the man and the dog are definitely working together. For God's sake, Trevor, always you with that conspiracy stuff. And you look at this and you think, and the reason this had such an impact on me is just yesterday, or probably on today, I sent the staff to put up. It's probably up on the site this morning, is that in Hong Kong, you have one of the Chinese officials gets up and tries to get the people to understand they need to act more like sheep. You know, they go, no, take advantage of the traits of the sheep. Be more like sheeple. We need a sheep. And don't, and Trevor, don't be a conspiracist. You know, the man and the dog working together, ha! They're not even standing next to each other. So I'm just like, man, it's like we're being conditioned. Well, help us with that conditioning, what to look for and what's coming. Dave Hodges, more. Common Sense Show, thecommonsenseshow.com. We come back.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like?
Yes. Okay. So I guess we can hear you clearly. It's pretty good. It's just like you're in a bathroom or something, but, you know, whatever. And it keeps going in and out. Are you up by Happy Valley Road or something?
I'm sitting in a bucket seat, so I guess that qualifies.
Well, it's the because I know up there, you know, you don't have a great cell signal all the time. So I'm just, are you moving into better cell or?
Well, yeah, I'm down here now at 75th and
It's sounding a lot better.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's improving. So what do you do for day job now?
Well, I'm officially retired. I don't coach anymore. I teach some classes at GCU. I want to keep that off the air because.
Well, we're in the archive, so, you know.
Oh, I don't care about that. I just, you know, I don't want to be that overt about it. So that's basically what I'm doing, and then I'm just running my business now. I mean, this has turned into a venture, not just a hobby or an activist hobby. It's actually becoming a venture of sorts. I started a radio network, and I got one other host, but we're preparing to bring on others, and We have satellite. We have the ability to get on terrestrial stations. We're broadcasting to 32 million people in Europe now. So, you know, it's pretty interesting venture, but it's taking a lot of time.
Yeah, very cool. Well, let me know if you need content. We just, you know, we got feeds. You know, the thing is, that's what we're doing is we just set up, it should be done now. They do the final uploading on the computer, but we turned Sam Broadcasting into our own station, and we'll take the feeds from here instead of from the network, so that way we can do multiple without them having to take from one that has their commercial, blah, blah, blah. So there's a request for us to do this, and we finally got it done, so I'm with you. But the thing, we have the technology. It was just, you know, the manpower. I mean, this is like work, man, you know? And I've always sold, and this is conversations Charles Goyette and I always had. I'm going, look, if you got to force it, you know, it's not going to happen. It's just going to happen when it happens. There's going to be a demand for this kind of programming. I go, don't worry about it. So he did well. He's fine. He's on the leading edge of the talent, you know. And I'm seeing it starting to, times are going to come scoop us up in the, you know, however long it takes us to be able to share with people, and then we're going to get our threat matrix number raised. You know what I mean?
So yeah, I'm just, I do.
So do you know how this thing is orchestrated or coordinated or what the variables are to give you your number? Did you get any of that information?
I'm sorry, what specific information?
The threat matrix, how you get your number, how it's raises and lowers.
That's a good question. See, I've been chasing information for years. But, you know, talking to the late A.C. Griffiths, Vance Davis, currently alive, but he was in the NSA, and two other people who won't let me use their names, they all say the same thing, that this massive database, it compiles into you. In fact, not only do they have a threat matrix for you, part of that threat matrix score, and I do know this, I've heard this three times, is known associates.
Yeah.
And when your cell phone is in location with another cell phone of a perceived dissident bad guy, then your threat matrix score goes up exponentially.
You know, let's talk about what, you know, the threats are. You know, to whom? I mean, you know, you're a threat to what? Well, to us ruling you. Okay, can I get that stripe and put it on my sleeve and wear it around? I mean, I'm wondering, can I, you know, have that number for everybody to see? Can I get a score like in the Olympic diving or something? I mean, you know, how are we going to do this? All right, we'll talk about that. Here we go.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. We're talking with Dave Hodges, the Common Sense Show. He has a web page that, and he publishes articles that he started his career really on Freedom's Phoenix writing. We encouraged him to, you know, share, man. And then it like, woo, what Dave had to say. I see him on Lou Rockwell and all over the internet. And there you go. Yep, Dave did some research. And as you start to do this and you start, you know, picking this scab, okay, what happens? Well, some other people come over and say, hey, I see you're picking that scab. So they start sharing. And tell us a little bit about your sources. I mean, is it one guy, a plethora of individuals from all over the place? It's retired something. I mean, what can you say about your sources that give you this advanced warning?
Well, the sources that are giving you the more dire warnings don't dare go public, or they can give the appearance of going public. And there is a distinction. But so most of them are ex-military contractor. Some of them have come to me directly. I've had DEA. During the border crisis last year, I was approached by an ex-station chief of DEA who was shown the door because he wouldn't go along with turning a blind eye to the drug running right under their eye. So they come to me in a variety of ways, and then as you get to know other hosts, sometimes you're able to tap into their sources as well. So I have an inner circle of talk show hosts that we get confirming data from each other's sources. And I don't usually go raw with unconfirmed sources. I try to look for corresponding data that will collaborate what I'm being told, because unnamed sources only take you so far. I'll give you an example. The article that you're referencing where I'm saying they're going to secretly arrest, that's not a big leap, because, see, the control of intelligence gathering was under the NSA. Obama is coming out with an executive order that's been leaked from the White House and is transferring that authority to DHS. That is highly significant because the NSA can't act on intelligence information. They merely report it. The DHS is an executive agency that will act on this information, and that's where you know things are getting serious. The list that they've gathered on you and I are about ready to go from nice to know, and here they are, to where, okay, now we're going to do something with this list.
Yeah, see, this is one thing that I really was concerned about, is that now you have the highest level of the most well-funded and the most equipped Star Chamber. You know, they will make their decision on not only who they think is a threat, it's what to do about it. And your day in, you know, habeas, produce me is like, no, you don't get to have a say. No habeas corpus, no trial, no jury, no, not just, and you're droned. And to think that this isn't coming to the U.S., it's like they, them, those need strife. They need riots. They need, and it seems like some of their actions, they don't understand what they're doing, or they understand exactly what they're doing. It's just that what they say they want and what they're going to produce are two different things. And they need American people to be, we're not like a lot of other countries. You'll get a lot of people in the streets of, you know, gimme, 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 and I want. But in America, I think people are more tolerant and just not as violent. They want to express themselves. And if you make the First Amendment an expression illegal, you make the Second Amendment and, you know, violence, inevitable, the JFK thing. And I remember that we had a story of this one woman that was talking about liberalizing gun rights and stuff in Texas. You know, they were trying to, you know, take it back some more. And she used that quote in the legislature. What did you say? What did you say, Sadie? What did you say? And when found out it was JFK, she's like, oh, well, and I'm going, wow, man. You know, there is an understanding that those need legislators and people in power and law enforcement and judges, that it's like Nazi Germany all over again. You've got to position your people in a position that the institutions support whatever it is that you're going to do. And when you have a population that believes or gives deference to these authorities, you're done. And if you can have a population that's, yeah, but, you know, grandma said we should treat each other like this, and you're a bad guy, that's the biggest threat to them, is the culture of the people. And the culture in America, I think, is quite a bit different than a lot of places around the world, in that we don't really just all jump in the streets all the time. I mean, you know, there's the protest, and you get the Occupy, and you get the Tea Party, and all this kind of stuff. But you really don't have a massive movement of just culture going and doing anything when they don't feel they have to, or they can just ignore you. And I'm getting the impression now that the culture is building to the point that I just don't care. Am I allowed not to care what Washington does? Oh, they did this new, yeah, I don't care. If you don't have your kids vaccinated, they got to be out for 3 weeks to be able to, you know, separate from the herd, and kind of, you go, okay, well, they're staying out for 3 weeks and they may not come back. So this attitude, I think, is what's dangerous to them and why we have false flags. They need to bring us under and huddle, and they even say this, the herd resistance, the herd response, the herd this, when they're coming to vaccination. I mean, they speak like we're cattle, they act like we're cattle, and we're going to get slaughtered like cattle if we keep acting like cattle. So I'm wondering, what's the mindset shift that would be the biggest threat to them, in your opinion, we should be doing?
I think clearly it's the voice of opposition, which is why we have a threat matrix list, which is why we have a red list, and why people who charge against tyranny and have followers are most at risk for the 3 a.m. Gestapo raids. In fact, people often forget, in the last 2 years, DHS has acquired 2.2 billion rounds of ammunition, more than ever used in Iraq and Afghanistan combined, and 2,700 armored personnel carriers. Who are they preparing to go to war with?
I don't know. They want to make sure whatever they want to protect gets protected and dissidents get squashed. I look at a lot of different things. You know, a friend of mine gets a new drone that, you know, follows him around, you know, and while he's jogging or whatever. You know, we have guys, I go to the remote control. There's a little electric go-kart track Donna got me, you know, for Valentine's Day. She always wanted to, big reason is I just wanted to test acceleration of electric cars. You know, put me in an electric go-kart and see what's up. And I was pretty impressed. Well, there they have these remote control cars that are just amazing as they're doom buggy and jumping around. They're having drag racing. They're drifting on concrete, different areas, on dirt. And I'm going, if they ever had a war here, the IEDs, the ingenuity of 13-year-olds, and the amount of equipment out there of creative use of damn, I'm not sure that they have any robots that's going to take us on and really have the... I mean, it's just a lack of fear in the resources and what's available to people here technologically and their abilities in education. The American people is going to be formidable, and they have to go at it a different way. They have to go at it psychologically, and they're losing that audience because nobody's watching their crap anymore. You know, it's just, you know, the cable news is going down. Nobody believes anything they say anyway. You come to find out decades later that they're all part of CIA anyway. You know, so I'm going, this is, and then we find out, I don't know if you got this news here recently, this big NSA release of new leak is that they got code on all our hard drives. I'm so shocked. You know, so I'm wondering what the best resistance is. What do you think, Dave? I mean, well, you're going to advocate for what?
What you have just laid out is exactly why America would be almost an impossible nation to garrison, even for a country the size of China, for just the reasons you said. So they got to go about it differently. They're losing, they're not totally losing the propaganda war because, you know, when you talk about this stuff, they still control the narrative. You're a conspiracy theorist. That'll get a lot of people not to listen to you. But what they're planning to do is really clear. And you can see it 9 times Sunday. They are preparing to collapse the economy. If you look at the Baltic Dry Index, which indicates global economic activity, Ernie, it's at an all-time low. Nothing is moving. We've got food rotting on the docks on the West Coast. We're headed for massive shortages in this country. They want to reduce America by making us dependent for them on food and water, them being the government. And then where they have us where they want us, they'll be able to try to impose their will.
Impose their will. More.
Impose their will.
With Dave Hodges when we come back.
This is Charles Goyette, author of the New York Times bestseller.
Okay. Impose their will. If I knew what their will was, I might care. I don't care. It's not mine. That's all I care, you know? And I'm going, oh, are you they, them, those will leave us alone. I mean, I try and keep it that simple because you can go down these roads and it doesn't matter, you know, what conspiracy or who did what. There's plenty of you guys out there, you know, making sure that we got that information. Mine is the inoculation. The solution is quit voting. I mean, you know, quit supporting this beast that's devouring you. Quit supporting a system that is orchestrated and created and used and evolved into the very thing that's whipping you upside the head. You got to separate yourself from this control mechanism. And I don't mind using politics. And that's one thing I wanted to talk to you about. I'll do it real quick here in the break. I see the same things. You know, I know it's going to get bad. But here in Arizona, it's really not, you're not in 2 feet of snow. I mean, you know, it's hot in the summer, but, you know, Native Americans have been surviving the summers here for a long time. I mean, you know, it's not like, you know, it's that bad. So I'm going, okay, and if you got a pool or access to water, man, you're even better. But I'm going, all right. Arizona is a good place for, you know, riding this thing out. I'm going, yeah, do you want to go to another country? Do I go, well, you know, I'm rationalizing staying because I got grandkids. Get over it. So I'm think it's going to be here. The thing is, though, is that I'm going, all right, what is the best advantage I can get if I'm going to stay? Do I need to keep doing what we're doing and amp up? And I got ideas that we've been developing the back end of Freedom's Phoenix to, you know, perpetuate this, which is just a culture shift. And one of the best ways to do that has always been our election cycles. And we have the mayor race coming up for Phoenix this August. If we run a can, we get, I just want to have the ability to put up a crap load of signs that go to a site that has a bunch of videos that gives them the information and just a little heads up and warning what to look for. And then, of course, they'll, you know, do the your tinfoil hat and whatever. I go, I don't care. Just spell it right. So this effort, we could really just, you know, Phoenix, the Freedom's Phoenix. It'll ride. What? We're going to take over something? No, we just know. You know, we just know. When they do this and this and this, you should act this and kind of whatever, and you're going to have to make a decision and choose wisely. And we do that. I'm wondering if your threat matrix goes up or it goes down because you're not, you're using the system. You're just sharing, and you're not directly advocating taking over anything, just ignoring. And now open ignoring, is that a bigger threat to they than those or not?
Yeah, I think it is. I've gotten more flack and more resistance when I have said things like, get your money out of the bank, invest in yourself. Also, don't shop in the Walmarts, Kmarts, and slave marts, and go to your local vendors and support those local businesses. They don't want to hear that. They don't want people doing that because that would collapse their system.
See, this is why I've been such a butthead about the Bitcoin blockchain technology thing. I'm going, this was promised to free us, and they keep making all kinds of efforts to get a permit slip and interface with a legacy system. And I'm going, fine, do it if you want, but you know, you're going to try and protect your industry monopoly and arrest all the other guys that aren't getting their permission slip. You know, so I'm just going, yeah, it's going to be a regulatory capture right off the bat as soon as you have regulatory. I mean, you know, so this, we're doing a block. Let's see, it's a Bitcoin Summit. info, you know, and you go check that out. It's going to be Pi Day, which is March 14th. I think you would get a lot out of it. I really hope you'll go. It's free.
Where is it?
At the Sheridan Crescent. All right, who we'll talk about? Here we go.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free.
You know, there's one thing I haven't talked to David about. He knows about it, but we'll share with him right now. We have BitcoinSummit.info. It's on what's called Pi Day. You know, it's 3.1415926 in the morning kind of thing. So, it, you know, I got to wait 100 years to get that date again, so we're going to use it this time. So I go, Pi Day. That's a Pi Day. What is it, a party? You know, you got pies or something? They go, no. It's, I'm going, oh, that's such a good idea. All right, we pick that day, you know, as good day as any. So that Saturday, we're having just one day. We're doing it the same, you know, the Sheridan Crescent. Where, have you ever been to our summits, Dave? I think you have. Have you?
I've been to some, yeah. I've been to the Freedom Summit.
So it's, you know, the same kind of thing. Now, this particular one is at the Sheridan Crescent on I-17 and Dunlap over there by Metro Center. And it's just a really nice place. We get along well there, and it's an easy reset, you know, push the button, and we're done. So we got the location, and we just want to do one room one day, and be big room, and we'll have the vendors in there and all the help and so on, but it's for merchants and new users and people exactly like you. I just started talking to people in the media yesterday. In fact, the Phoenix New Times is going to do an article on it. So I'm going, okay, we have newbies, people such as yourself, what's up, and merchants that are going to be able to at least get the history and the understanding of what's coming, because it's coming. And the thing that I think threatens the status quo the most, and to the point that Wall Street just put in $75 million, you know, into one company that does interface with the banking system. So I'm going, yeah, here we go. Okay. So the technology allows for people money. For the first time, it's peer-to-peer transfer, no central authority of, and kind of bite me. And it could be worldwide, and it's generation next, and it's already started. So I'm going, okay, even technology that they're using, certain wallets, to interface with 2 billion Nokia flip phones that's, you know, ubiquitous around the world in developing countries. So once you do that and you plug everybody in, it's not like you got to convert people, you know, to using Bitcoin. You just got to get people that don't have any financial services. This is their first opportunity for free, and it's easy and it's secure. This is the threat. It's not in the Fed. It's ignore the Fed. as we do this different technique, can I? Are you available that day, Saturday the 14th of March?
I should be. Yes.
Do it. Do it. I'll even give you a 5 minute or you get to say something just cause, you know. And okay. After the lunch thing, you'll get kind of, you know, wow, this is interesting. I'm going to something, you know, Dave Hodges says. So we'll do that because I think a lot of your audience and the people that are very influenced by what you have to say, there are solutions. There's a lot of solutions out there, and this is one of them. So much so that I think the government really wants to get their hands on this thing. So if they can, that's kind of my question. I don't know, can they? Well, then they will. So I just need to know if they can't. Well, we'll see. It's math. So what other solutions are you looking for? I mean, it's like food production, learn how to grow a tomato plant out of a milk carton, what?
Absolutely. Get as much money out of the bank as you can, you know, leave enough to pay your bills, and invest in taking care of yourself. And that requires security. And that means having alliances with your neighbors, but, you know, the unmentionable almost guns and ammo, because those neighbors who haven't prepared are going to be the ones knocking your door down. Food and water, obviously, you need to educate yourself. You need to read a prepper book. You really need to invest in water filtration, water purification systems, because water in a prolonged economic crisis is going to be people's biggest challenge. Because if the water treatment people walk off the job, cholera will be the number one killer.
You know, Arizona has, I mean, you know this, in the Valley of Phoenix, that's why it's here. We have a lot of water, you know. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's underground. You just dig well. I mean, hell, we flood irrigation here in Sunburst Farms from well water.
The problem with that, like I live on the Hacienda Water Aquifer, which is the largest one in the state. But where my property sits, I'd have to go down 900 feet to strike water. That's not practical.
Yeah, no, I'm not saying it's evenly distributed. But there are pieces. I mean, out in the middle of the desert, Tonopah just, you know, floods. So I'm going, okay, you can just pull it out, and they just got big 12-inchers just flooding fields from, you know. But then you got to have power, you know. Then we get into solar and so on. You know, one thing, Donna, in the first hour, put up the story linking to Peacekeeper app. I just want to make sure when Dave gets, you know, from his travels and you get to the site, Donna, I was going to send you the show, and go ahead and look at the first hour, and you'll see this app, and this is what it is. There's an application that you load on your phone, and you go, all right, there's like four main choices. I got a medical emergency, I got an intruder, I got fire, I got, invasion, something, right? So I go, you set up who you want at the text message or contact, and neighbors, friends, family, you know, someone close. Instead of dialing 911, I dial all my friends. I just, boom, they know what the emergency is. They know which dog not to kill. They know, you know, who's supposed to be there and who's not, and the layout of your home, and the first responders to come help you are your friends. So I go, if this doesn't replace a whole bunch of screaming, we need government. So I really encourage you to check that out. I'm going to start emphasizing these kinds of solutions a lot more. So I'm in your travels and in your show and your writings and so on, what the emphasis that you're putting on the people in preparation for this, I guess it's being independent, but it's what? Food, water, you going as far as guns and ammo, or voting for the right guys? I mean, what's your interface with government?
You know, voting, you know, maybe we should continue with it as a symbolic gesture to show how corrupt the system is, but voting is largely a waste of time. I remember your old sign, still voting, LOL, question mark. I mean, those really capture the essence. Also, forming network alliances with your neighbors. You can't defend your property 24/7 in a societal breakdown. But before the societal breakdown comes, I encourage everybody, you know, don't put most of your assets in the mega banks. Don't shop at the Walmarts, Kmarts, and other slave marts. Go to your local vendors. Support local business. Support people who make America strong, not people who are stealing from America.
Well, the money, you're saying, don't support the banks and get, you know, and they socially and economically engineered our generation, and certainly even those older than us, that part of their paycheck went into this, IRA. You went into retirement of this. You went into the tax deferred of whatever, and you're locked in the stock market of the ETF of the, it's all ours now. You know, some to take it out, you'd take a tax. But I've had friends, you know, a lot of my friends my age, you know, they hit their 50s and so on. They go, yep, over the last decade, and you know a lot of them, they make a good living. They go, just give me as much as I can. Yeah, I'll take the, you know, $10,000 tax hit on this one. I'll, you know, take the penalty on that, and I'll take, and then they just went and bought silver. you know? And they go, you know, I just feel better. It sits there, and I'm done. I'll worry about it later.
Gold and silver, unquestionably. And I'd say this, what your friends are telling you they did, half a loaf is better than no loaf. I totally support that, because in a year from now, we could be saying, what retirement?
I think that's pretty baked in the cake. I mean, they're doing, you know, we already had, they just passed, it didn't go, I mean, it got mentioned, it was, you know, a buzz for a couple of days, but a lot of people missed how important it was that they put all the taxpayers on the hook for the next financial crisis, the next bailout, the next, it's all,
pardon me? The G20s did that, Ernie. They declared on November 16th,
your
bank account, the G20 nations in a meeting in Seoul, South Korea, they declared that your money in the bank is not money. So therefore, by the prioritization of the FDIC compensation for a failed bank, you go to the bottom of the list, and we're going to be supporting the people that put us in this mess with the credit swap derivatives. They're first on the list now.
Man, it's like...
First on the list to get our money.
Get it out. I mean, you'll take the hit. I mean, we are using it. I mean, our contributors and our bait, and we're trying to transition over. That's a lot of the work that we're doing on the site. And I'm wondering if that awareness, that thing, is what makes us a threat. And then, you know, this threat matrix that you're talking about, that was kind of the focus of the movie Winter Soldier, Captain America. Have you seen that yet?
Yeah, I've seen those, yeah.
I mean, you know, does that, you know, cause you to go, hmm? I mean, you know, I encourage people to see it. Are you endorsing that movie as kind of, you know, what somebody should see to get the idea?
Flip the coin. I mean, the theme is ubiquitous. It's through our movies, it's through our TV shows, you know, our popular entertainment. It's filled with it. Some people argue it's conditioning for the inevitable. Some people say it's part of, they got to tell us what's happening before it does.
Yeah, I'm wondering, I'm going, yep, we're being conditioned. You watch a popular TV show, and it's always about some, you know, we're just being, yep, yeah, here it comes. Yep, yeah, here's the technology. Yep, yep, there's surveillance. It's just like they're desensitizing us. They always do this. And no matter how big the revelation of what the NSA is doing now, or they, them, those, whoever, I'm hoping that it's just people like, eh, screw them. Yeah, let them try. Well, they're going to do, you know, the flatbed truck's going to show up at your front door someday for something if you're not compliant enough. And if you're not compliant enough, you get the crap beat out of you by uniform. And sometimes on camera. Well, at least it was on camera. Dave Hodges, TheCommonSenseShow.com. And he and his audience, they're working on it. He's getting the information. A lot of times you hear it first from Dave. Thanks for coming on, David.
Thanks, Ernie. My pleasure.
From the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here!
No fear here and declare your independence. Be here and stand. You know what I want to? I'll just share with you some of the people that are going to be speaking at Anarcopoco. We got Jeff Berwick on the line, and it's just right after we have, you know, another, you know, tropical getaway of these guys talking about and how the planet's going to be saved in Bitcoin and stuff. A lot of these guys are going to be here. We get to just hang with them. So I got, I see hours and hours and hours and hours of conversation with a bunch of people that I know and friends and get hooked up again, and we'll be drinking pina coladas. So I'm looking forward to doing this, and I have some good close friends that are going to be there, so we're going to have a good time. We've been talking about how we're just going to be chilling and such, but there's a lot more going on here by just getting out of the United States. For a lot of people like myself, you know, it's rare that I'm out of the United States. I think I've only been to, Panama, Mexico, Canada. That's it. Now, Jeff Berwick, he's been, that list is a lot longer. So just getting out of the U.S. gives you a different perspective. But at the time that you're planning a narco poco, Jeff, you know, there's people are, you know, burning down presidential palaces and stuff, you know, and hell no, we won't something. And they're going, I'm going, and a lot of people go, no, don't go to Acapulco. You'll have the, and I'm going, hell, man. The people rising up. That's where I want to go. So tell me about, in the news, what's going on there and what we might be able to witness.
Hey, first of all, thanks for having me back on, Ernest. As far as what's going on in the news, I actually haven't really been paying much attention lately. I haven't heard too much about anything. There was a few months there where there was some protests, for sure, absolutely some protests, anti-government protests, which I have no problem with at all, in Mexico City. There really wasn't hardly anything here in Acapulco. There was, for a few hours, it was about 50 people had a protest, but that was it. It's way overblown what people are saying. Not to mention that they are anti-government protesters, so I have no problem in general with that. And but it's amazing how many people hear all these things about Mexico and get all worried. And we've had so many people already started to come down for an Acapulco, and every single one says, "Wow, this is nothing like what they say it is in the news. It's totally fine. It's very peaceful, very safe here."
Yeah, but you know. Because they can. We're all going to die. Well, you know, my thing is that it's the attitude, it's the culture that I'm looking forward to experiencing. And of course, with this list of people that you have here, a lot of these people are friends. So they're looking at kind of a vacation. We're going to have some fun. But it's more than that. There's the purpose of this event is really what? Networking for what?
Well, I didn't really have a purpose. My main purpose was that I'd been going to a lot of freedom-related events in the U.S., and like Pork Fest or Freedom Fest or Libertopia, and I just found that it was just weird to have a freedom-related conference in one of the least free countries on Earth at this moment in time. And a lot of people mentioned that I spend a lot of time in Acapulco. Why don't I do one here? And so around 6 months ago, or a little bit more than that, I decided to do it. And I really wasn't expecting much. I didn't know if anyone would be interested. I hadn't done any Nielsen Gallup polls or any sort of informal polls. I just sort of just started it, and it's already become quite a buzz. A lot of people, as you mentioned, are coming down. We've pretty much sold out, although we are still accepting registrations, but we're just trying to squeeze people in now to most of these things, the workshops and the conference itself. And so that's the main thing. But as you pointed out, there's going to be so many great people here, so many amazing anarcho-capitalists who are doing so many great things, a lot of them in the Bitcoin world, including Roger Ver, the Bitcoin Jesus, and Cody Wilson. And I just found out that Peter Todd, who's a core developer for Bitcoin, is coming down. So there's going to be a lot of interesting people. So it's going to be a mix of fun and networking and parties and interesting information as well.
You know, Peter Todd, I saw that on here, and I think he was the only core developer that was at Satoshi Roundtable. And I'm really looking forward to talking to a developer about a lot of things and questions that I keep having. And a lot of the answers that I get are, you know, unsatisfactory, not complete. I'm not feeling that I'm getting the full, and maybe they're just not capable of answering the questions. So Cody and I are very friendly. You know, I mean, we get along fine, and he's on the show a lot. But I'm hoping that he can translate for me a lot of this stuff. And I'm looking at, we're doing a Bitcoin summit. We'll have some material down there promoting it. And we're having on Pi Day, you know, March 14th, you know, 15 and 9:26 in the morning. I mean, you know, so we're having some fun with it. But I got that day. So we're doing the Bitcoin summit as a merchant thing, you know, a newbie and merchant. That's not what, and whenever I go to these things, I'm going, whoa. If anybody was interested and they came here, they got a Memorex commercial, hair blown back and didn't absorb and had no idea what the hell was going on. And I'm going, you guys want wide adoption? You need to, like, help them adopt. I mean, I don't know what the heck you're looking for, some government permission slip or something. That is not going to do it. So in the atmosphere of a narco poco, which is a, you know, lucky name, you like, who came up with that anyway?
There's actually a guy who does We Are Change for Colorado, came up with a name. I actually offered on Facebook, I offered half a Bitcoin to whoever came up with the best name, and he came up with it. So he got the half of a Bitcoin.
Well, how many nano moments did it take him to come up with that? I mean, I mean, that's one that just rolls off, man. Okay, so that's good. Now, the events leading up to the weekend, we planned on coming down there earlier, but I didn't know it was going to be so structured. Are you just filling in days because you need, you know, slots for people to speak? Or is it, I mean, how many people do you plan on coming? I didn't anticipate this being a large event of attendees more than just the speakers and presenters and everybody just sharing.
Yeah, neither did I. I actually assumed it was going to be mostly a lot of sort of us more industry types who are already speaking and at these things, that it'd be more of a industry event. But it's really caught on. It's been sort of the buzz around everywhere lately about what's going on. And we're not just filling in spaces. We've had a hard time filling in for everybody who wants to be involved. There's so much information. For example, on Tuesday and Wednesday of next week, we have Exobase, which is a two-day entrepreneurship work camp, and that's by Skinner Lane, who's does something called Exosphere out of Chile. Very popular. He's actually speaking right now, I believe, in Guatemala City. Then he comes here, and then he's moving on to Bogota, Colombia. So he's very in demand for this sort of a thing. And then on Thursday, we have Dana Martin doing sort of an unschooling and peaceful parenting workshop, telling people how other alternative and, I guess they call them, radical ways to deal with children. And then we have Luke Radowski, James Corbett, and Dan Dix are all doing Change Media University that day also. And that's all before the conference starts. So there's lots going on. And then for the conference itself, we have so many great speakers, including, well, there's so many. I could go down the list. Well, of course, there's Luke Radowski. There's James Corbett, as I mentioned, Roger Ver, the Bitcoin Jesus, Dana Martin, who's a world expert in unschooling, Tim Moen, who's the leader of the Libertarian Party of Canada, Dan Dix of Press for Truth. Then, of course, we have a lot of the media-related people that I'm sure you know, like Mark Edge of Free Talk Live, Angel Clark's already moved down here, you're going to be here, Mark Victor, all kinds of people, Julia Taransky.
How did Mark Victor get me? You know, Mark and I are good friends, and we started the Freedom Summit together and all that kind of stuff, and I was just at his home for a party Saturday. May go again this Saturday for something. And he's such a great speaker and presenter. And I'm just wondering how you knew that.
YouTube?
Yeah, I know. You know, he did a Casey thing. I mean, you know, he'd give you what fur. But we're prepping for something. These minds are getting together. Something's going to come out of something. There's something. What? I mean, especially with a name like Anarcho Poco, you know, that's just going to be get. All right. More Anarcho Poco, Jeff Berwick. And we're going to talk about some other stuff, too. We'll be right back.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Here in Phoenix, Arizona, I am from Acapulco, is Jeff Berwick, but I don't see him in his chair. Hey, Jeff, hello, Jeff.
Yes.
Get in your chair, man. You know,
I'm in my chair.
You know, this is, you know, let's go ahead and talk about, you said one time on the show that Americans just need to get out of the country. I mean, just go experience life somewhere else. And we've talked with Angel Clark on several occasions, and we're just getting an idea. And Donna just put up one of the anarcho-cast or anarchast that you have up there about her experiences there. And I haven't even looked at it. I just saw it. And I can see she's a lot thinner. I mean, she seems like she's a lot healthier and just enjoying life there as you're sitting there smoking. But I mean, you know, so I'm, oh, that's one thing. Yeah, let's talk about that. Smoking in Mexico, do they got you cordoned off and thrown outside, or how's that work?
Well, Mexico is a big place, and in Mexico City, they have sort of like some of those rules. But here in Acapulco, it's sort of called the deep south of Mexico, really. They don't really have any rules. I remember once, about 2 years ago, I walked into a restaurant where I used to work on my laptop all the time, and I used to smoke while I worked. And one day they came up and they said, "We're so sorry. They just passed a law. You can't smoke inside in restaurants anymore." And I said, "Oh, man, what's going on in Acapulco? I thought it was a lot better here, a lot more freedom." And then the next day I showed up and everyone was laughing and smiling. They're like, come on in. I said, "Why are you guys so happy?" And they said, "We just decided we don't care about the law. Go ahead and smoke." And so no one really cares about too much regulations here. Private businesses can make up their own minds whether they want to allow people to do things like that or not.
You know, there was, what was the story? I think it was you. I don't know. Where did I was watching something. It was about they turn on the lights and following you, and you just went to the expat coffee shop, and they said, "Never mind." I mean, you'll tell us that story.
Yeah, that was a few years ago. I was on my scooter. I've only been pulled over twice in 6 years in Acapulco, and that was one of the times. And so I was on my scooter, and the cops came up behind me, put on their lights, and I just kept driving until I finally got to Starbucks in a nice area of Acapulco where there's a lot of fairly well-off people, and I just stopped right in front, and I started really just razzing them out, calling them criminals. I said, "Why are you accosting me?" They said, "Well, you don't have a helmet." And I said, "So?" Because I know there's no real law for helmets here. They thought I was a tourist or something, and they thought they could get some money off of me. And I said, just leave me alone. And they just sort of left. And the second time I was driving along, and it was 3 a.m, and I was stopping at red lights, but there was no cars on the road, so I just kept going if there was no traffic. And another cop car came up behind me, and they started talking over the speaker, but I had my music on really loud, so I couldn't really hear what they were saying. And I just didn't stop. I was like, "I'm just going to go home." And they followed me for a bit, and then they pulled up beside me and they told me to pull over. And I said, "What do you criminals want?" And they just kind of all looked at me and just turned off. So it's a different sort of a culture here. People don't bow down to the police like they do in the U.S. They sort of treat them the way that in some ways they should be treated when they're trying to accost you or extort you for money. And so that's the only two times. And actually, since the summer, they haven't had transit police here. The transit police went on strike, and those are the guys that give the tickets for little things like going through a red light and stuff like that. And the traffic was so much better and people liked it so much more that they still haven't brought them back, and no one wants them back.
Oh, that's too bad. Well, you know, this is when we talk about these kinds of stories, and certainly being someone, you know, on the air and such as yourself, I've had a lot of people, audience, they get all full of them and heard an example of somebody on the show or something we do, and they go, and then they get a beat down in a straitjacket in the holding cell. So I'm just like, you know, you're not advocating we go do a Jeff Berwick on all the officers, are you?
No, not at all. But
in another country, you gonna come save me, man?
there's so little police interaction with people here, and they actually treat the tourists really well. So you really have to do something really bad before a cop really talks to most tourists here. It's very, very rare. And most things just aren't really illegal either. So walking down the street with a drinking can of beer is not illegal, and then no one has a problem with it. So you really don't have any problems with the police in general down here. And if you do, it's usually something small, and usually if it's really something serious, like you actually did do something kind of dangerous or kind of wrong, or then you usually just have to tip them $10 or $20.
You know, the attitude, you know, Donna asked me, she goes, "Well, do you want me to pack one of your suits?" I go, "Hell no. I'm going on vacation. We're going to Narco Poco, and for whatever, no." So you advocate we got to get all dressed up in the tropics?
No, not at all. It's the conference is right on the beach, so a lot of people will just be wearing very casual wear. When we have the concert on Saturday night, it'll be at the pool, at the hotel, and also on the beach. So a lot of people will just be probably swimming and while they listen to the music and things like that. The only possible reason, if you want to, is if you really want to go out to a really nice restaurant, like very high end or a very nice club, you should definitely pack some sort of a dress shirt or something like that. But other than that, no, it's fairly casual.
Make me. All right, so if I can't wear shorts, I probably don't want to go. Maybe I'll put something nice. Damn it. I wish you didn't say that. Okay, so it's going to be, Don and I, we're really looking forward to it. On Valentine's Day, we went bathing suit shopping for her. I mean, so that was entertainment. So I'm looking at, not even looking at the schedule. That was not why I wanted to go. It was all the people. The networking coming out of these kinds of conferences, like we do Freedom Summits and so on, is way more beneficial, or at least as beneficial as the presentations. So is there something you're looking to, you're just hoping this cauldron's just going to produce something, or is there some direction, or move down here, or buy my thing, or move to something? I mean, what's your goal?
No real goal. The real goal was just to have a really great event, something that hasn't really been done in this way before, have it outside of the U.S., because so many people are considering leaving the U.S., and so many people have. And so this is a great, for a lot of people, sort of a first a chance to see a different culture that's not too far away from the U.S., see how it works. And I think for most liberty-loving people, they will love it. I've never met anyone who hasn't loved it. There really just is no regulations or rules. Nightclubs close when the last person leaves. There's pretty much 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, something going on anywhere at any time. There's no real anything. So it's very relaxed. But there's no real goal at all. I haven't. Some people said, are you trying to create like a Free State Project South? And it's like, not at all. Definitely didn't have that in mind, but we've already had at least 10 or 20 people who have already came here and already moved here just because of this. And every day now people show up, and a lot of people are showing up on one-way tickets. So we actually have people like Angel Clark and a number of other people who have moved here, and they actually try to help people who want to move here, help them find an apartment or a house to rent or things like that.
Well, how does the locals view this? It's an invasion of a couple of dozen people. Oh my God, it's the beginning of whatever. Or they're just like, yeah, y'all just come on down from the philosophy or from the money. When we come back, we'll talk about that. How welcome is, an anarchist, libertarian, leave-me-aloneist mentality? Is that like, we need more people like you, or damn it, they just won't pay their fair share. They're too rich. We got to get some equality for take their guy. I don't know. We're going to find out. It's a culture thing that I'm really interested in. And, of course, we're going to have a lot to talk about when we come back. We'll be right back.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please, feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. I'm Ernest Hancock. One thing I asked Jeff to take a look at, just the front page of Freedom's Phoenix. There's some stories there that pertain to, what he's doing and Dollar Vigilante and a lot of things that we work on. And I'm just, if you had to have a reason to go visit and listen to and talk, just look at Freedom's Phoenix. They'll tell you what's up. And one of the things that is really of interest to me, and there's Angel Clark. And one of the things that's really interesting to me is the de-dollarization. You know, we have Russia launches SWIFT alternative, linking 91 entities. Now, this is just like wire transfer and banking and doing kind of an outside of the Western influence central bank of not you. And we're doing this over here and now and suck it. And then we have India lifts ban on bank gold imports. Gold can again be used as loan collateral. These are signs of a much larger macro something's a happening. And the dollar vigilante, you know, this is kind of stuff that you keep track of, Jeff. You know, tell us the news as it pertains to the news to you of news. You know, how do you look at this stuff? Well, wait a minute. I'm not picking you up. Jeff, can you hear me? Jeff, can you hear me? Jeff. Why am I having this problem? Okay, I'm gonna hang up and call you right back. Because, you know, we want to make sure we get what he has to say. Let's try it again. I got you there, Jeff. Jeff. Hello. There you go. Okay. Can you hear me now? Now, how did we have this problem? Hold on a second, Jeff. We're seeing what the problem is here. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, now I can hear you.
Oh, I had the music still running over here. Okay, sorry about that. We rewired. Because of Fiend Phone, you know, we did that. We're still trying to get all the things set to where it works well. You talked about you did try that with Michael W. Dean. What do you think of that?
Well, I didn't try it, but I asked him about it in an Anarchast interview I did with him, and it sounds like a great product, but I've never used it myself.
It is very clear, it's like you're in the studio. I mean, you have good equipment here, and we're having a pretty good Skype thing, but it's a little bit better than Skype because you don't have a lot of these problems. It just takes away all the crap and just hard links right into it. It's perfect for talk show to talk show and have co-host kind of thing, so it works well on that. What I was saying is that we're looking at the news of where we have the SWIFT parallel thing, Russia doing their deal, and starting to break away. And then you have India starting taking gold as being used as collateral, you know, in banking and so on. I can see the cracks. And from the Dollar Vigilante pages and your research and your advocacy and your group, I'm wondering what signs are you looking for the dollar going away and economic upheaval of and getting ready, need to go to Narcopoco and talk to some people, how to prep for whatever. What is it that you're looking at that concerns you?
Oh, a lot concerns me. I pay attention to this stuff all the time, and there is so many symptoms of the end of the monetary system as we know it coming, which is something I always talk about. We're seeing just every day now there's something going on. You brought up India. I think it was the Netherlands just requested their gold back from the U.S. Germany has already done that. Numerous other countries have. We just saw Switzerland, which pegged itself to the euro for a few months and then unpegged, which rose the currency by 30% overnight. We're seeing Russia, China, all kinds of countries all moving away from the dollar right now. With what's going on with oil, there's something going on there. I'm still not quite sure who's doing what, but there's a lot of playing around. The Russian ruble's been collapsing. The Ukraine, whatever they call the Ukraine fiat currency, has been collapsing. There's so many things going on. Japan has said they're going to double the yen money supply, although they haven't yet, but they will because of the their financial situation, where even if interest rates rise 1%, it will completely bankrupt the Japanese government. And of course, interest rates are essentially at 0% in Japan right now. We're seeing in Greece what's going on. By the end of the month, they have to decide what they're going to do there. That could end up very quickly in a complete collapse of the euro, or at least major repercussions if Greece defaults on all of their debt. And of course, all they're talking about is they say, well, the problem here is that Greece has too much debt. And so the whole issue is, should we get them more in debt? And the new government in Greece, who, you know, I don't like any government, but they're saying, no, that's enough. We're not going to pay any of this back. So we're seeing Germany moving closer to Russia now than to Europe. These are all signs and symptoms of a major collapse coming. And I think it'll be things like the Japanese yen, the euro, euro. I think the U.S. dollar will collapse for sure, but I think it might be one of the last to collapse, and we're seeing that right now as everyone, not everyone, but a lot of people are realizing there's a lot of problems, especially with oil going down more than 50% in the last few months. There's so much oil companies that had so much debt that they're going to have to default because at these oil prices, they can't make any money. So there's so much going on, and people are actually rushing into the U.S. dollar quite a bit right now, stupidly, in my opinion, thinking it's a safe haven and rushing into treasury bills and the most indebted government in the history of the world with over $18 trillion. I think it's close to $19 trillion now, and that's all using funky accounting. The actual debt and liabilities of the U.S. government is about $90 trillion now, which is over $250,000 per person in the U.S., man, woman, and child. So a family of four in the U.S. would have $1 million of U.S. government, federal government debt overhanging it, and that doesn't even include state debt or local debt or their own personal debt. And Americans have, I don't think think they've ever been more indebted personally as well. So this is all the very ends of a what is essentially a debt-based monetary system. That's the entire central banking system is set up that way. And all they're doing now is printing money all around the world. Every central bank is printing money just to make it appear like the system is still working, but it's not. And it's going to collapse. And people like Russia and China are moving towards their own banking systems now. Places like Brazil as well. They're trying to get outside of the U.S. banking system because the U.S. government is really clamping down around the world on transactions and making it very hard and making every bank in the world have to file with the IRS through the Foreign Account Tax Compliance Act, which is FATCA, which makes it almost impossible for Americans now to get their money outside of the U.S. into a bank account outside of the U.S. Without having to report through the IRS and things like that. So these are all the symptoms of a major problem and a major change that's going to be happening. And when these things start to happen, as we found out in 2008, they really snowball and create a massive tsunami. And I think this is basically 2008 is starting again. We're starting to see the very beginnings of that. Of course, you remember in 2008, one of the first things to really change was oil went from over $120 to about $40 in just a matter of months. And we saw that recently with oil around $100 go to under $50, very similar to 2008. So I'm expecting a 2008 style major crisis, but this one's going to be way worse because the governments of the world and total debt of all these governments has gone up 50% since 2008. So the only thing that's changed here is they printed a lot of money and went into way more debt. And so this one's going to be way bigger than 2008, and I'm actually expecting it to happen in a large part this year, and I'm expecting it to happen in the second half of the year for numerous reasons. But we're going to see all kinds of craziness. So if you haven't gotten yourself into hard assets or outside of the U.S. dollar or the U.S. banking system, I don't know what you're waiting for.
Well, what is the role that you know, alternative currencies, like the people currency of, this has been my thing. When they started the BRICS, we're going to go ahead and we're going to be something else. We're over here and we got enough resources that we're going to create our own competition with the central banks of the Western, whatever. And I'm going, all right. But it seemed to me after the last summer, I had some people on that were at the conferences of the BRICS last July, and I got the impression they're just negotiating for a leather chair at the same mahogany table of we rule with you, you know? And I'm going, then here comes Bitcoin, and they go, damn it, we need to combine our efforts against the people having money.
My name is Jacob Hornberg.
You see my point on that? I mean, I got the impression that the idea is that something like Bitcoin is a threat to they, them, those of whatever they create of anything. It doesn't matter when the people shift over to their own currency, and that can't be allowed.
Yeah, it's definitely on their radar. I don't think they're super scared of it yet, but they should be.
Yeah, that's one thing should be. And why should they be? Maybe we'll talk about that a little bit, because a lot of people are, you anarchists and liberty. Yeah, what are you going to do? What's the solution? How do I go this? And they go, yeah, but we don't like it. You know, I mean, I don't know what their mindset is, but let's go ahead. When we come back, I want to talk about some solutions that you're offering to people in light of everything that you just said, and also on Greece. Greece, the problem that I saw with that was they go, okay, we're not paying it back, and they are trying to shoehorn some more money to them, you know, because they need Greece not to default, because it's a domino effect on a whole bunch of other stuff. Do you have something that you can share with us on that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, let's go. Let's plan on that. When we come back, I want to talk about the what's going on in Greece. And finally, you got them, no, we're good. We don't need it. They go, no, you got to have it. And I remember, God, wasn't it Greece? They got rid of, like maybe it was Italy. You know, there's some guy, and you're done, and we got a Goldman Sachs guy for you. You know? So, I mean, didn't that happen to Greece, too?
I'm not sure about that. I don't follow exactly every single country and what goes on, but it's going to be interesting what happens here. I think they'll probably end up just bailing them out again somehow, because if they don't, it's going to cause a snowball effect that will probably destroy the euro.
Well, I'm just like, are they going to make them take the money? They go, no, we're good. We're out. No, you're not allowed to leave. You're not allowed to. I mean, because that was the threat that Germany was making, is a couple of things. They get to veto whatever they do, and you got to have austerity. And, oh, by the way, we got tanks, you know. It's not sustainable. And a lot of people, they didn't see, you know, 08 coming. And a lot of us, we were screaming in 07 because we could see the bubble in real estate here getting ready to go. And we started to understand what was happening, and we were screaming it. But, you know, then when it happened is, you know, people, of course, were surprised. But I don't think they really understood how widespread it was until after, you know, all this TARP stuff and quantitative easing started, what they had to do to prop it up one more election cycle. Well, can they do it again this time? Well, sure, their goal is going to be one more election cycle. So I'm just, at some point they can't, and it breaks. And when it does, it's the crack up boom kind of thing. And I'm wondering what metric you're looking at. I mean, like, you look at the Baltic Dry Index. I mean, that tells you, you know, there's nothing behind. There's no, you know, economic activity that's going to sustain this stuff. And they go, yeah, we just print more money. And then sooner or later, we're talking about deflation. People are starting to pay off all their debt and so on. So then our economy is based on the issuing of debt. Well, what happens when you stop doing the debt and the people start to save? And they start to prepare, and they start. It's just a movement, a culture thing that's going to take it all at one time. And I need to know what it is, and then how it's done, so we can talk a little bit about, you know, Greece, and then the impact of you know, Swiss coming out of the pegging. And I mean, these things are just signs of something larger, and I want to know what your opinion is and how that's going to manifest itself, certainly to Americans here and their retirements and all the social and economic engineering by government of putting their money in buckets of it's theirs now, when they got the plumbing all going to Goldman Sachs or whatever. So as this goes, the solution you have is, hey man, you know, I got grass huts here somewhere on the beach. So, you know, let's go ahead and talk about some of the things a little bit more, and then what the solution is. Here we go.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, Donna, we're going, and a lot of people think it's paradise, so that's good. We're going to paradise. You know, one thing that I want to make sure that we cover is the signs are all there. I mean, as we had, you know, all the guests that we have over there, I mean, it's just, it points at something, but they're going, yeah, Ernie, you've been saying this for like my friends and family. Well, you've been saying that, you've been saying, and when 08 happens, and I'm like, that's what I've been saying. Well, it's still, you know, the trains are at least running, you know, and we have, you know, the TV works, and, you know, it's still not, you know, I go, half of your money and value just went away. Hell, a lot of your money just went away. I'm going, your home, what you thought was your piggy bank, it's going away. This, and you can explain it all you want. What is the trigger for people? What do you think it is that gets them? They go, hey. I'm sure it's a money thing, but is there any kind of glow on the horizon that people have traditionally and historically looked to as a sign of the end is nigh? I mean, what's your experience?
Well, we've never had a total fiat currency system around the world, so there's really no way to know how this is all going to play out. It's only really been since 1971 when the U.S. essentially defaulted and went off the gold standard. And that it was very interesting. At that moment in time, people in places like Germany, they were saying, we'll never use dollars again. It's not backed by gold. But they just kept using them because they had so much trade. And after a while, everyone just forgot it wasn't backed by gold anymore. And that essentially took the entire world off of the gold standard. There's only a few countries that stayed on it, and Switzerland was one of them, and they've gone very off it now, and they even had a recent referendum asking if people want to go back to the gold standard, and it was apparently voted very heavily no. I think that election was rigged, but that's besides the point. But we've never really seen this sort of thing happen when we've seen currencies collapse all over the world. This happens all the time. There's literally hundreds of currencies have collapsed in the last few hundred years, but when that happens, for example, in Zimbabwe, when that happened a few years ago, a lot of people in Zimbabwe saw it coming, and they moved into South African rand or U.S. dollars or gold or silver. But this time, it's going to be very difficult because there isn't going to be one safe place to run in terms of fiat currencies. And so we really don't know how it's going to play out. This is definitely going to be probably the biggest event in human history, in my opinion, because we're going to see the entire fiat currency system collapse in one way or another. And of course, when the currencies collapse, that's not good for the economy. It essentially, the economy just dies overnight as these currencies become worthless. We're seeing interesting things like Russia has really been buying gold. They've also been selling U.S. treasuries like crazy. They just sold a huge amount again last month. China has been hoarding gold, essentially. So what we could see is a shift here where the Western currencies, including the Japanese yen, the euro, the British pound, the U.S. dollar, all go into a near hyperinflation, and then China and Russia back their currencies by gold and create a huge amount of funds heading their direction. So anything could happen. It's going to be wild and crazy. This is definitely something that's going to happen, and you should be prepared for it. And as far as people recognizing it, I find your average person, they just don't have the time or the interest to really pay attention to these things. So as long as, like you said, they still have a job or the water's still running and the buses are still running, they don't really think about it too much, but they really should, because this is going to happen, and if you're not prepared for it, it's really going to be a shockeroo to a lot of people, especially when they turn off the EBT cards or the money on the EBT cards won't buy you even cat food. We've seen in a few cities in the U.S. the EBT cards or the welfare things or the food stamps sort of went offline for even 8 hours, and there was near riots, and that's going to happen. We're going to see things like socialist insecurity become almost worthless as the dollar starts to hyperinflate, which it will at some point fairly soon in the next few years. So there's really no way to explain it to some people. Some people are going to get it and some people won't. A lot of people are going to get hurt during this collapse.
Are you seeing, what really got me, not necessarily excited, but I could see where, premonition of here it comes. I went to Consumer Electronics Show. We go there, I don't know, last 5 years or so. And last few years, you've had a representation of Bitcoin. And you had one, and then you have a couple last year. And then this year, they pimped it out. And I could see the openness of the manufacturers that were there. They're prepping for acceptance of Bitcoin, the point-of-sale machines. It's going to be a tablet, interface of mom and pa doesn't need this big, giant, $8,000 system. They just have tablets that sit on their desk and doing Bitcoin and swipe and done. And I'm going, okay, here we go. So Bitcoin itself, I can see Wall Street, they're $75 million that we know of getting pumped in. I go, yep, that technology, but they're going to try and shoehorn it into the legacy system and know your customer and comply or die kind of stuff. And a lot of the people that we've had on over the last couple of weeks since Satoshi Roundtable has been, we had, the boys. It's Eric Voorhees and Snow and Bruce Fenton and David Johnston. And we covered it. Michael Turpin. We got them all. But the point was, is that I'm not sure that they understand how much of how valuable blockchain technology is to the United States government to have something that works. That can, it seems like it's going to be a fallback position, that they're going to do something that all of a sudden it's going to be GovCoin or Goldman Sachs has their own digital whatever, and we have Ecuador comes on with a digital currency, but they go, it's just tied to the dollar, don't worry about it. I'm wondering if this technology is going to be co-opted. Can it be co-opted? And what's the future for this people money of cryptocurrency?
Well, one of the great things about Bitcoin is it really can't be co-opted. There's a lot of conspiracy theories about how it could be, but it really can't. What they can do is start to accept it for taxes and things like that, and start to regulate it so businesses would have to report their Bitcoin income and all that sort of thing. And that's some of the things they're doing right now. But the real Achilles heel here for the government is the whole reason the U.S. government or any major government in the world today can do what they're doing, including the U.S. government and numerous occupations and wars and terrorists attacks around the world, is because they can print money. They can't print Bitcoin. Bitcoin is set up so that you cannot do that. So that will take away a huge amount of their revenue. Most of the real revenue of the U.S. government comes through the inflation, the hidden tax, as they call it, of inflation, which not many people see. People see things like, oh, the minimum wage should be $16 because people can't afford to live on $12 an hour or $10 an hour anymore. But they don't realize that whole reason for that is because of inflation. And that's the beauty about inflation for governments. They can always blame all these problems and why people are getting less and less wealthy and why there's more and more unemployed because they can say, oh, well, it's China or it's greedy capitalists, so we'll tax them more. And people are like, yeah, tax them more. But the real problem is actually the inflation from the central bank. So even if they start to co-opt us to some extent or start to use Bitcoin more and more, and if the dollar does collapse or fiat currencies do collapse and it becomes a standard currency in a place, that will severely limit government. And it's essentially the same as going to a gold standard because that's what the whole gold standard was about limiting the amount of money that governments can print.
You know, a lot of these guys, I talk to them and they'll say, yeah, this will save the world $400 billion a year or a month or a day or whatever. I mean, you know, it's a big giant numbers of how much saving. I'm going, yeah, that savings you're talking about is some banker's profit. You know, they're going, hey. So when you're talking about saving us $400 billion, you're talking about taking $400 billion out of their system. You know, so there's a lot more threat. I'm wondering, are they seeing it as inevitable? They're trying to get regulation and threaten death and dying on people that don't comply? Or is it like we're talking, Eric Voorhees at a Coinapult, he's like, yeah, we don't care. Take your 300 and whatever million people in America and we're going to deal with the rest of the planet and you can suck it. So I'm just going, this concept, as this current system crumbles, there is a backup system, but it's only through the people. I mean, people make it, and it's the first time that we've even had this opportunity. And I've been a real butthead about it, going, look, man, I just want to make sure that we're not funding the very lobbyists that are there to protect a new industry that counts on the monopoly from the government to deal in Bitcoin, and anybody else that does bad actor, go arrest them. You know? You see my point? So I'm just like, that's not good. You know? So these are a lot of the conversations that I'm hoping to have there, just to kind of give me a on the horizon feeling or see what's coming. And I'm really looking forward to Anarcho Poco for not only the presentations, just the relaxing. Don and I deserve a break, and to meet with people such as yourself and say hello. So we're looking forward to a relaxing time there. What website should people go to check it out?
It's just anarchapoco.com. It's kind of hard to spell. It's anarchapulco.com. It's hard to spell, but if you even get close on Google, you'll find it.
Yeah, get close. It'll pop up all over the place. Or you just look at freedomsphoenix.com. You'll see the ads all over the place. So, you know, you'll know about it. We're going to have a lot to talk about when we come back after next week. You know, save yourself.
On Free Talk Live.
Thank you very much, Jeff.
Thank you.
I'm glad we got to pump that a little bit. But these are the things that we didn't get to talk. We'll talk. You know, there's a lot of conversations I'm looking forward to having. Hopefully, we'll make some time for me and some other people. We drag you in. You got nothing to do and join the conversation because there's some things I want to talk about.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Peace, brother.
All right. Bye. See you soon. Bye.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
This is the Liberty Beat, your daily source for Liberty news and activist updates, online at LibertyBeat.com. I'm Brian Hagan with your Liberty Beat for Thursday, February 19, 2015. Gold is trading at $1,215, silver at $16.64, and Bitcoin is trading around $237.28. Today's Bitcoin price brought to you by Express Coin, the fastest and most reliable way to buy Bitcoin. Buy Bitcoin today at ExpressCoin.com. Extreme weather, from droughts lasting for weeks and torrential rainstorms robbing the country of vital crops for food, to snowstorms of 70 inches plus, stopping cities in their tracks. Supporting your family through these difficult times is what eFoods Direct does. Go to eFoodsDirect.com/LibertyBeat or call 800-620-5520 to learn more about food security in a time of crisis. Mistrial. That's the outcome in activist Antonio Baylor's appeal trial for his March 13, 2013 arrest in Gonzales, Texas. Baylor, who was court-watching at a friend's trial, was arrested for telling a police officer to go expletive himself. The officer had just escorted him out of the courtroom and told him he would be arrested if he returned. Baylor was eventually found guilty on the charge of disorderly conduct and fined $1 by the jury. He appealed the verdict, and at his trial yesterday, shortly after jury selection, the judge in the case declared a mistrial. The reason? The judge told the jury that the trial was the result of an appeal, a statement which is against a Texas rule for appellate courts, which bars judges from discussing prior proceedings. The new appeal trial is scheduled for March 30th and 31st, over 2 years after the original arrest. This isn't the only legal matter that Miller is currently facing. He's also standing trial in Austin, Texas on February 23rd for a failure to obey the order of an officer charge he received in association with his cop watch activities. Miller recognizes just how hard it is to get an even taste of justice.
It has become clear to me that in order for people to see justice within the system, they need to have tremendous resources in terms of connections, finances, and time.
Thankfully for the activist, his intellect and community has allowed him the resources necessary to fight back. Baylor knows his legal battles and lawsuit will not bring down the police state, but he is hopeful that his efforts will make a difference.
Through these cases, we can set precedent.
Negotiations between union and oil company representatives have resumed after a week off. The United Steelworkers Union is demanding safe staffing levels at refineries and chemical plants, as well as an increase in wages. Despite the negotiations and strikes, the companies continue to operate with temporary replacement employees. A growing number of Ohio parents are joining the movement to opt out of Common Core standardized testing for students. Cleveland.com reports several school districts are seeing an increase in parents and teachers who are speaking out against the controversial testing program. Some parents have expressed concerns with the school's focus on Common Core, while others have removed their children from school in an attempt to avoid the new tests. Canadians are uniting in their resistance to a bill aimed at reducing security threats. Bill C-51 would grant new powers to the Canadian Security Intelligence Service, including the right to disrupt or counter-message terror activity in and outside of Canada. Critics say the bill will criminalize free speech, remove privacy protections, and eliminate due process for Canadians. A number of press organizations and political leaders have begun to speak out against the measure in response to public pressure. The Liberty Beat is brought to you by Midas Resources Incorporated, helping clients convert their paper 401ks and IRAs to solid gold and silver. Get their 10 Reasons book free by calling 800-686-2237. That's 800-686-2237. Support also comes from the Texas Bitcoin Conference. Hear from speakers such as Charlie Trim, Dr. Robert Murphy, Vitalik Buterin, and Catherine Bleich. March 28th and 29th at ACL Live at the Moody Theater. Tickets on sale now at TexasBitcoinConference.com. This is the Liberty Beat for Thursday, February 19th.
Hey, Patrick. How are you?
Hey, good. Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm good. Can you hear music in the background or the commercial or something?
I heard the commercial.
I mean, can you now?
No.
It's just me? Okay. Yeah, we're having, depending, whatever, we're doing, like, stuff. The what I'll go ahead and do is promote your book, but there's more. This is a, yeah, I've been talking about it. We had Dave Hodges on in the first hour. So, right. You know, that was, you know, of interest. And I didn't know that he had read your stuff back in, like, freaking 80, you know. And you guys have known each other for a while and talk, so that's good. I'm going to go ahead and just do a read of your bio here. And that'll take me a little bit. I'll just get right to it. And then we'll talk about the new book, but also this National Town Hall thing. You know, let's go ahead and we'll talk about that. And then, you know, the future is it's nigh, man. I mean, like, here we go. Coming to a future near you. All right, here we go.
Live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Today! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Yeah, no fear here in Declare. Y'all ready? It's me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com. Oh, I was better than earlier. I did that good. Okay, Patrick Wood. We want to talk about Patrick Wood's new book, Technocracy Rising, the Trojan Horse of Global Transformation. You know, and here she is right here. Now, from the gentleman, Patrick Wood, my third hour guest, let me go ahead and, you know, read you a little good here while he's there. We're looking at you there on Skype. Okay. Patrick M. Wood is editor of the August Forecast and the August Review. The August Forecast provides a succinct look forward to analyze trends relating to markets, economics, politics, and finance. The August Review is an historical review of global elitism, its players, and policies. He founded the August Corporation on October 11, 1975, as a registered investment advisor with the Securities and Exchange Commission. The company initially offered portfolio management services to investors in the United States until 1980. In 1978, Wood commenced publication of the Trilateral Observer to specifically track and document the activities of the Trilateral Commission, which was then seen to be the very core of elitism and multinationalism in the United States and abroad. TO, which is the Trilateral Observer, was co-edited by Professor Anthony Sutton, formerly a senior fellow at the Hoover Institution for War, Peace, and Revolution at Stanford University. Wood and Sutton co-authored two successive book volumes, Trilaterals Over Washington, Volume 1, and Trilaterals Over Washington, Volume 2. Trilaterals Over Washington quickly became a bestseller and over the course of about 2 years sold over 75,000 copies internationally. The books were very well received for excellent scholarship and original research, and even became a frequently used textbook in political science classes at many colleges in U.S. universities. And it was that book, those two books, that were, in my estimation, the beginning of a lot of this trilaterals of the commission of we're going to rule us. And as I started in the late 80s becoming aware and getting involved and going to meeting, kind of just learning, I wouldn't join anything. I just, I'm just here to what the hell's going on. And I came at it from commerce, you know, international exporting my father's company, long story. But the point was, I could see there was something there, the New World Order, the Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act, that we rule you and we get a cut, and the violin case carrying guy in America, just another gang with a flag. And I'm going, this is, it's fascism. I could see it in legislation. But people saw it before. As young 20-something-year-old Patrick Wood, you know, came across, and you're talking about your Financial Observer. So what was it that you were doing that you came across this information?
I was a research analyst at the time.
And for what?
Well, for stock market for, you know, for commercial companies that that had traded stock around the world. And I had a specialty probably more in the gold industry. I was researching gold companies around the world, but many other companies as well. And I kept running across these names on boards of directors, from people from the Trilateral Commission. And it just sparked my interest. I didn't really understand it. I didn't have the basis for it at the time. But then Jimmy Carter got elected, a peanut farmer from Georgia, from outside the Beltway. And when he started appointing members of the Trilateral Commission to his top government positions, like in the cabinet, I got more and more concerned about it. And then I found out that both he and his vice president were members of the Trilateral Commission as well. And by that time, I really had a complete sense that there's something big underfoot. It didn't really all crystallize for me until I met Anthony Sutton down in New Orleans at a gold conference. And we happened to sit together at the same table for breakfast. We started talking. He had just been released or forced out of the Hoover Institution at Stanford. We found out later, pretty quickly after that, actually, that it was David Packard, who was the chairman or president of Stanford at the time, was a member of the Trilateral Commission. And Tony's research was getting too close to these people. I mean, they just didn't want to have him pursue it. So they let him, they forced him out, and his career was pretty much ruined at that point, he felt. But we got together and we realized, man, this is the biggest story of the century. So we jumped on it and we collaborated and, you know, became pretty good friends along the way, too. And we did a lot of writing, a lot of research, a lot of kicking stuff around. And it was a big story. What can I say? It was.
Well, you know, my thing is that I'm thinking back. It's 1988. I'm just starting to get there's something wrong here. And as the more I scratch the surface, I go, well, this is fascism. I mean, this is did we fight wars and cold wars and all this and restore to prevent exactly and now we're it? I mean, it became very obvious to me very quickly that the way government worked was not the way they told me it worked when I was in high school and junior high. And you know, that I'm just a bill thing is all crap. You want to know how it really works? Watch House of Cards with Kevin Spacey. Okay, so you know, and you only wish, and you look back and you go, I wish it was only 10 times that bad. You know, so it's really, really, it's coming to fruition now. And I remember one thing. Well, first I wanted to ask a question. When you could see all these same people and they belong to Trilateral Commission, how did you know? Did it say, I'm a Trilateral Commission member? I mean, what designated that they were?
Well, that's exactly right. We had the membership list. It was, it wasn't secret. People, of course, in the Trilateral Commission and the elitist call us conspiracy theory wackos, you know. But all of their information that we published was readily available for anybody that wanted to go out and get it. And admittedly, it wasn't running headline stories on, you know, New York Times, but, you know, we got the membership list directly from the Trilateral Commission. They published books and papers that were readily available, and we got them, we read them, we analyzed them, we said, what does this mean? And it wasn't too hard to figure it out.
But how come, you know, when I first started going, you know, everybody had to tell, oh, you're going to get in politics, you need to understand who you're up against, and this is what you're up against, New World Order of up against. And I'm going, okay, so you look at it, and I go, all right, well, it seems, all right, I get it. I mean, they, them, those won't leave me alone. They do it because they can. I mean, you know, it's not that hard to understand. But it was, you mention it, or somebody, they go, oh, you're tinfoil hat wearing, crazy, kind of whatever. And then all of a sudden, they got a webpage, and they're celebrating their 40th anniversary. And David Rockefeller standing up there, ha 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 ha, we did it and you didn't know, and you know, and bite me. And I'm going, wait, why, how were they able to just say you conspiracy crazy people and it be so obvious to people such as you? Was it because we just didn't have the internet? I mean, was it because the fact trees weren't big enough, because they controlled the media? Tell me how they got away with this. I don't understand.
Part of it was the membership that they selected originally. They got members from Japan, North America, and Europe. That's why it was called the Trilateral Commission of three regions. It referred to three regions. And they picked a very diverse membership. They had representatives of the corporate world. They had representatives of the legal community. They had representatives of academia, like Zbigniew Brzezinski and Richard Gardner and other high-level academics. And they also had several members of the press that they invited in. And, you know, like Time Magazine and New York Times, Wall Street Journal had a director for some time. And they co-opted the major media of the day to be friendly to their cause. And they pretty much swore up to come to the meeting and talk.
When we come back, let's go ahead and we'll talk about the complicity of the media. And we're starting to find out that these guys were part of the government that they were supposed to be reporting against, and that's a fantasy. So we're gonna learn a lot more, Patrick Wood.
Uncovering the secrets and exposing the lies. That's what the readers of FreedomsPhoenix.com get every day. FreedomsPhoenix.com constantly providing the information, the real news about government policies, and the real relationship we all have with the coercive government. The real condition of the economy, innovations in technology, breakthroughs in energy, health, and computer science. Learn the truth well before it's admitted to in the lamestream media. The corporate media, nothing more than distributors of government propaganda. But now there's an alternative. FreedomsPhoenix.com. Constant news updates on the issues that affect your life in the most important ways. With liberty and property under constant attack, FreedomsPhoenix.com provides the understanding behind the propaganda, and it encourages the participation of its readers. Go to FreedomsPhoenix.com. That's Freedoms with an S, Phoenix.com. FreedomsPhoenix.com. The revolution between the ears has already happened.
What I'm looking to do when we come back, I'm going to play a clip from Braveheart. You know, a rebellion has begun, and it comes to where he goes, yeah, well, you'll support it from lands in the north, oppose it from lands in the north, and I'll support it from lands in the south. And kind of, I can see this game playing out. But there are certain things that are changing, and they were looking for technology to be able to rule us. And you're going, yeah, and will technology be able to save us? And I look at things like just the internet and communication, the ability to use our own, how we put up our own satellites. But this Bitcoin blockchain technology thing, are you familiar with that at all?
I am, yes.
We have a summit. It's a Bitcoin summit. We use our Freedom Summits. We usually do. And we're just going to do a one-day merchant and newbie user kind of thing on what they call Pi Day. You know, it's a 3.1415 at 9:26 in the morning kind of thing. So I'm going to take advantage of that. I got to wait 100 years for that one to come around. But so we're doing Pi Day here at the Sheraton Crescent. And I'm hoping you can go. There's no charge unless you want to eat lunch and other packages. But it's going to be free for a day, and you're going to get a full history of this. And I'd really like you to, you know, prepare a 5-10 minute part of kind of, there's a bunch of little speeches I want to present at the lunch or something, that I think that if you were to prepare what I want to talk about when we come back. You know, it's about the carbon credit thing and the energy as a basis for a currency and how they were planning this. And I see this technology as making it capable of them doing that very thing. Now, of course, you know, Bitcoin is different and they can't have the inflation, all the benefits of the technology as a currency. But they see the technology can be, you know, kind of twisted into what they want to do, too, and have their version of government coin or whatever the heck. So, yeah. But with the history of what you were oh, did you ever get hold of Richard Grove? Did he call you?
You know, I did. I'm trying to think of the conversation now. I did.
Tragedy and Hope, you know, out of New York. And so you guys have hooked up.
Yeah, we're hooked up. We haven't had a one-on-one conversation.
Did you watch his Bill Binney interview?
I did. I watched a couple of things that he did.
I mean, does that, you know, dovetail into your awareness?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, absolutely. He's putting pieces together.
Yes, he is. All right, hold on. Here we go.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800, 602-264-2800, and now, Ernest Hancock.
Father?
Come in, come in.
A rebellion has begun.
Under whom?
A commoner named William Wallace.
He will embrace this rebellion, supported from our lands in the north. I will gain English favor by condemning it and ordering it opposed from our lands in the south. Sit down. Stay a while.
Yeah, let's talk about it. How are we going to do this rebellion thing? There's rebellions. Now, one of the things that Patrick Wood made me aware of, I did not know, is that Zbigniew Brzezinski, how you say his name, he has been a major figure. He's kind of like the Henry Kissinger type, you know, out there, we're going to rule the world and this is how. He's a professor at Columbia, and he wrote, you know, Between Two Ages, America's Role in the New Technotronic Era or something like that. And the point was is that they're going, look, we have the capability to computers and IBM's, you know, our buddies now. And, you know, they didn't put the people on the cattle cars, you know, to go to the gas chambers. But they had punch card and told you who to put on the cattle cars, you know. So this mentality, this capability has been there. And I'm going, all right, they wanted to create a new currency based on energy. Now, of course, this is Rockefeller. So, you know, well, hell, of course they did. So, you, Patrick, you know, help me understand what that was. And then we'll see how that relates to now. But what was their goal?
Their goal was to regulate the economy according to energy rather than money. And it wasn't just money, it was the actual dissolution of capitalism altogether. And to have a new technocracy established, which was an economic system, that the principal currency, if you will, would be energy credits. And they actually devised an energy script. You know, you can kind of make a parallel. Think of food stamps today. You know, you have an allocation that's given to you based on how many people in your family and your income and so on. But they envision forecasting how much energy would be produced in the North American continent in a given month or a given quarter. They would simply divide that by the population and then pass out energy scripts to all the people in society that they could use to buy goods and services that would be priced according to the energy it took to make those goods and services. That was their vision of balance, so they could, you know, they would extract as much as people consume and so on. And never, of course, they never did it. They didn't have the technology to do it, but they defined the system very carefully. And there actually was pictures of the scripts that they had devised. And the idea is that these scripts would expire at the end of the period. So at the end of a month, you'd have to just tear up any remaining credits you had and get your new allocation for the next period. So there was no way to carry forward wealth. You couldn't save anything. You'd simply just lose it if you don't use it. And there was no generational wealth or no property wealth. Private property was just completely done away with. And the you know, assets of the world would be held ostensibly in a public trust, managed by trustees who were the technocrats who decided how everything would run. So that's where energy credits came from.
Okay, well, this sounds a lot like carbon credits and cap and trade. And so is that part of their plan? Is that it?
Well, it very much is. And so let me explain the disconnect a little bit. Back in the 1930s, there was no Rockefeller money given, or anybody else of a big nature, given to these people, the technocrats. They were operating pretty much on their own. That's maybe a reason they didn't get any further than they got. But by the end of 1942 or 43, technocracy had kind of just faded into the woodwork, and it was still there, but it wasn't very important, and nobody was really talking about it. When technocracy was revived by Brzezinski with his book Between Two Ages, and then subsequently over the next 40 years, you have basically a modified version of the original technocracy with Rockefeller money behind it. Okay, that's the difference. There's lots of money behind it now. And so they took the original script or the original play, they reworked it a bit, and it's much the same as it was back then. We can see distinctives today that are absolutely traceable to the 1930s. But cap and trade, carbon credits, limiting CO2, you know, and climate, all the climate change issues and stuff that are creating policies to press us down. All of this is related to energy, and all of this is the forerunner to some kind of a carbon-based currency. That's what they're pushing for, clearly, all over the world, not just here. It's all over the world.
Well, to be able to be successful in doing something like that, they have to eliminate competition. I mean, they got to, you know, it's illegal. You're not allowed. You can't. You're not inside the system of whatever. Then we have India starting to buy up a bunch of gold. They're going to use gold as collateral now. They just announced they're allowing banks to do that. We have Russia has started their own kind of SWIFT competitor wire service banking connection bite me thing. You know, the BRICS are threatening, you know, they want to negotiate for their leather chair at the mahogany table. And then you have this cryptocurrency wave of people money going in the Bitcoin thing. And I'm going, there's a battle going on. It's ideology. You know, this has been, you know, for the last 100 years has been ideology of we rule you. And now with the very technology they hope to rule us with and the smart meter, we know everything about your house. I'm going, it seems to me that the people are starting to rise up. It's like Martin Luther, and we can print our own damn Bibles, and we got internet, and we know we don't need to go to the priest and suck it. You know, so I'm wondering what you're seeing as how this is going to play out from your perspective of knowing these guys for a long time.
What I know about these, what I know about their modus operandi over the years is they have not ever really come up with a unique idea of their own. They're great imitators. They're great hijackers of movement. They hijacked the original Green Movement, for instance, from the 50s and 60s, and they used it for their own benefit. That's the eco movement, and they used it for their own benefit to bring a sustainable development, Agenda 21 and stuff like that. They hijacked these movements. They didn't come up with original thoughts about them. And by and large, everything they've done significant in the last, at least last 50 years, has been stolen from somebody else, the ideas, the methodology, whatever. And probably my greatest fear is that if something arises and is successful, in the case of Bitcoin, is maybe it's not as successful as some would like it yet, but you know the concept is there. If the concept proves useful to these people, they're more likely to try to hijack that than they are to go out and invent something brand new. So I never really look for them to create anything brand new in that sense. I look for them to take over something in society that suits their benefit. Or suits their purposes, and you know they'll use that to advance their cause. And there's a lot of, if I was designing a currency, there's a lot of good things about concepts about Bitcoin that would work perfectly for a carbon currency, for you know, for energy based currency that was based on a resource, a physical resource, if you will, like oil, gas, just energy production in general.
You know, there's, I really hope that you we'll talk here off air real quick, but, you know, you want to see strange bedfellows, they hijack movements. You know, what did we just report yesterday? The Koch brothers and the Sierra Club have combined their efforts and come together in support of Tesla cars and being able to have direct sales to people instead of going through dealerships. You know, weird stuff's happening.
Are you a political activist who does things that the government might not like?
Yes, I am. Okay, the Pi Day, March 14th. Are you available? Do you think you might be able to go?
March 14th.
Saturday.
I think so. Let me just look at my calendar here. March 14th. Yeah. Oh, yeah, it does.
Well, is it something, are you close enough you can make it down to Sheridan Crescent and do a 15-minute to say, yo, what's up? I'd really like for you to just be there to learn. Is it something that everything that you've been talking about, and the more that I see what's going on, I realize what this carbon tax credit thing is, mm-hmm. It would really, I think, benefit everybody and certainly yourself. And Dave's going to go, so I hope you go and kind of give this perspective, pass out some stuff, have some books, whatever. You know, it's that you don't got to pay unless you want to eat lunch or get some Bitcoin or, you know, drink it some trash. But I really would hope that you would listen to the history and some of these experts explaining it to the layman, because this would be really, really, really a manifestation of exactly what you're talking about. Yeah. I think they're going to take this technology and they're not going to let people just have their own money without a fight. They're not going to do that. And when they had, we had here recently when Ross Ulbricht, the Dread Pirate Robert, Silk Road drug whatever guy, they go, guilty, guilty, guilty. The same day, the New York Department of Financial Services, Ben Lasky, comes out with a bit license of now you have to, and if you don't, see, this is what will happen to you. And then there was a story that they went to, what do they call it, SOCOM, United States Special Operations, blah, 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 and they put in there, yep, we got Green Beret, we got the SEAL team and this, that, and so on and everything, and we're working with the paramilitary combat units of the CIA to go after Bitcoin terrorists. Because by its nature, it's terrorists, because we don't see everything. We must, and I'm going, you sons of bitches. So they're it's got to have some kind of government approval or use a mechanism by which what you're talking about. Yeah. So if you understand the tech and you go there and you just kind of, I think it would be a very, it would advantage me and us just by you listening and learning this, because it is the mechanism by which they're going to enact what you're talking about.
Yeah. No, I would find that interesting personally. I've had an interest in, I've been watching and reading articles about Bitcoin from almost from the beginning, and it does interest me as a technology and what people are doing with it.
Well, we had the Wall Street now just put $75 million into one of the exchanges, you know, Coinbase. Right. And when Wall Street did that, you go, yeah, here we go. Okay. So, yeah. And then, of course, they're going to want to do whatever they want to do. But the real threat is just like a lot of these things, you know, the internet, growing your own food, having your own communication satellite, being able to make your own power. Now, anything that gets you off the grid is like, damn, we gotta lasso that or something. So if you have some examples, when we come back here in just a little bit, you know, some examples of them bringing the sheep back into the pen, you know, over the years, you know, like you had the Sagebrush Rebellion that was starting to go on. You had, you know, the militia, but you have all this stuff. You know, what is the big threat? And I remember South Korea, there was a magazine like Time Magazine there, and then there was a 60-minute kind of show out of Japan that they were all freaked out about this militia thing and contacting our Second Amendment is for Everyone group and so on, because they were afraid that the tax slaves were not going to pay the bonds back, the debt, that this was an anti-tax revolution. And I'm going, oh. All right, well, we're starting right back. Here we go.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona. Okay, Patrick Wood, we're going to hook him up. I'm going to, entice him to go. We'll give him at least, once he gets the morning presentation at the Bitcoin Summit with some of the guys that are, you know, our guy, mature guys are high techie, old man, we know what's up, and be able to explain it to us to where we understand what's going on. And from his perspective, Patrick Wood can, I'm sure he'll start to realize something. This technology can be used to enact whatever the heck they wanted to do. It's just changing the algorithm based on this, based on that, this input, a variable kind, encrypting, done. And I would be shocked if those aren't already working on this. So but Bitcoin is going to be the competition to that. I don't know. I always keep asking. I go, can they co-opt it? Can they take it? Can they? If they can, that would be really hard. Oh, you mean NSA hard? I mean, come on. We just find out the NSA has code on all the hard drives. That's sold. You go to Fry's, you just installed NSA. Hello? You know, so I'm just, oh, please. So if Patrick goes there, you know, after he gets the morning presentation, be just a 15-minute, this is what I do, here I am, there's my book over there, and I can see, and my opinion is. So if you do that, Patrick, I'll give you some time. You up for it?
Yeah, I'm up for it. That'd be fun.
Okay, so, and you have been keeping track of this and reading and kind of looking at this Bitcoin thing. What's been your impression? How has it impacted you and your thoughts?
Well, it's a fascinating technology and concept. And by the way, I have a technical background. I've been had been involved in computer programming and software for years during the 80s, 90s. So, you know, that sort of thing, cryptography especially, has been an interest to me for years. So I watched it with great interest. And it's definitely ingenious in its approach. The from a technocracy point of view, as just to relate it back to what I'm doing now, as I'm talking about technocracy, the idea of having a touchstone seed to the algorithm that's based in the real world, not on somebody mining blockchains on a computer. Having a touchstone, for instance, like the amount of oil reserves that are in the ground, or the amount or the number of oil refineries that there are in the world, or some touchstone that's relatively unmanipulatable. If that's used as a seed for the availability and the quantity of coins or currency available, that would fit and make possible the original energy script concept by computer. And it could be electronic. It could be completely automatic. It certainly could be manipulatable.
Yes, and that's my point. I just know you're going to give them a number, a dial, and it's this much, and we said in the report and the variable from the Department of We Screwed You, okay? Might as well just be Federal Reserve.
Yeah. But, you know, what we need to consider today is the moral hazard that the technocrats have to destroy capitalism, because they really believe that the only way to usher in technocracy is for capitalism to die. They're competing economic systems that do not mix. That's one reason we have such economic angst in the world today, all over the world, is that these two systems are fighting for each other, and they do not, they just will not coexist. One will die. One will die completely, and the other will emerge completely supreme. It could be capitalism, I suppose, but right now the way the play card is created, technocracy is picked as the winner by the elite. That's picked as the winner. So capitalism is going to have a very hard time hanging on, and all of the concepts that we understand and grew up with about capitalism may completely vanish, and we'll have to learn a brand new paradigm, a brand new meme to understand what they're doing with technocracy. And that's one reason I think it's important to talk about technocracy now, so that we can figure out whether we even want to let it get that far. I don't think we should, personally.
Well, I don't know how we're going to stop really anything. It's just, adoption by individuals and whatever they perceive to be in their best interest. When you start having the concept of a decentralized, distributed, even networks of everything, everything distributed, everything down to the people, everything, it's as simple as having an app on your phone. Instead of dialing 911, I push a button, all my neighbors come up. I mean, these things exist, so I'm just going, it's an attitude. It's a philosophy. It's a manifestation of this desire and this need for us to be able to survive and thrive and don't need a permission slip. And I'm going down. We just had before you a gentleman named Jeff Berwick, and have an event in Acapulco all next week that we'll be down to, called the Narco Poco. So we're going to have some fun with that. And it's the minds that are there that are thinking it's Generation Next. I can see, I even got an email from a close friend and a contributor that said, I'm really impressed with Generation Next. I'm seeing, because I point out these different, abilities and the knowledge of Generation Next are going, let the whole thing go to crap. I was never expecting I was going to get my Social Security anyway. You were just enslaving me. And this one other idea, I want to get your comment on this. The Article 5 convention thing. We can fix all this if we just go back into convention. And my thing is, you're still voting. I mean, my point is this. If they do a new reboot of America, my first question is, are you going to bring forward the debt onto Generation Next? Help people not even born yet. You go, yep, and your dad, agreed to and signed on, and here it is, and we refounded the country, and we owe X amount of gazillion dollars and got it on you. I mean, there's going to be some kind of if you sign here, they're going to bribe us with, all right, we'll cut the debt in half, or we'll not do it, or we kind of know we got to keep that and continue, and people lend us money. It's a debt thing. And I'm going, we are guaranteed tax slaves forever. And the only enticement to do any of these things that you're talking about is somehow it's going to be, if you sign on the dotted line here and you agree to refound the country under, and we got these, you know, the Constitution is a new Bill of Rights of we say what you can't do, well, then we're going to take away the debt, or we'll start all over again, or something. I mean, do you see that coming? And what's your opinion on Article 5 convention?
Yeah, there's already evidence of that kind of bribery when with the president talking about you know, cutting the student debt down either in half or just waiving it all together. It's crazy, but you know, there's already that kind of carrot and stick out there.
Well, what's he going to give in exchange? You got to do two years mandatory service or something.
There's always a trade-off. There's always a cost of doing such a thing, and it'll be a manipulation for sure. They're not going to just get it free, so they'll end up doing something for it or giving up something for it. But my point is, the government has, and the elite have no problem on making deals with people. You know, they're the probably the original experts on bribery and corruption, but. If we do get to an Article 5 convention in the United States, I fear that there will be no United States left after the first round, even. And the reason I say that is these people, like the Brzezinskis of the world, like the Kissingers of the world, and the other academics and some of the other big mucky mucks, for instance, in the Trilateral Commission, these people have been planning and plotting for years for a constitutional convention. Kissinger and Brzezinski called for a convention even back in the 70s. They've been trying ever since to get this going. So you look at who's calling for this in the first place. Then you look at, okay, where are the sharks that are, and who are the sharks that are circling the prey? And you know, it looks like it's real calm waters for the most part. And a lot of conservatives and even some liberals are calling for it in good faith. They don't realize that the people who will come in and take over the convention, hijack it. Okay, there's that word again. They're going to hijack the convention. They're going to do what the heck they want to do with it. And the rest of us will be left out in the cold.
You know, I just reading the back of your book, you know, what does it say here? It goes, the dark horse of the New World Order is not communism, socialism, or fascism. It is technocracy. Started in the 1930s and reintroduced by the Trilateral Commission in 73 as the new international economic order, and it is now known by some like sustainable development and the green economy. We'll talk about it.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
Excuse me, is this where I get a license to start a new business?
I wouldn't be hasty. You have to get a license to go out of business, too, you know.
Oh, well, look, I've invented this little anti-gravity machine, see?
Oh, is that why you're walking 2 inches above the floor?
Oh, yes, it's very comfortable. It saves on shoe leather.
Yeah, well, you have to fill out these forms and report to the Human Services Department of Manpower Orientation and register with the Fair Employment Practice Commission, the Wage and Hour Division of the Employment Standards Administration, the State Sales and Income Tax Division, the Internal Revenue Service, and the Social Security Administration of the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare, and of course, OSHA.
OSHA? I thought that was a little town in Wisconsin.
You'll find out. Say, floating around like that could be dangerous. Have you checked with the Consumer Product Safety Commission?
Well, not yet.
Come to think of it, you actually are flying, aren't you? Look, you need to go over to the Federal Aviation Administration and the Transportation...
It's very hard to get anything done these days if you're in business, but free enterprise built this country. Think what could happen if we don't keep it free. A public service of this station and the Center for the Defense of Free Enterprise, Bellevue, Washington.
Besides, we just can't have people floating about unregulated, you know.
Are you tired of governments murdering people around the world? Stop using their money. There is an alternative. Bitcoin is a stateless, free market, non-political currency. Bitcoin cannot be inflated or controlled by any government. By using their money, you are helping the state. Stop doing it. You have an incredible alternative available now. Learn it, use it, spread it. Get started with Bitcoin at weusecoins.com. That's weusecoins.com.
Patrick, do you remember what I said we were going to talk about when we came back? I forgot already. Slacker. Okay.
I know. Why did you ask me that question?
Yeah, I know. I forgot. Well, what happened was, you know, some people came in and were, you know, I got distracted and I forgot to write it down. The what we're going to go ahead and do is there's going to be, we'll probably go a little bit more on the effort to do the Constitution Convention, why they would do that, and because they love me, I'm sure. And the I got a piece from The Patriot with Mel Gibson. It's only about a minute. I'll come back with that. And it's basically, you know, being ruled by 3,000 tyrants 1 mile away or 3,000 miles away. What's the difference? You know, so it's an attitude of what is our going to be our mindset that we're going to need to have in order to navigate what's coming. And I'm just, you know, and I really kind of preach to generation next, you know, my grandchildren. It's all about my grandkids. You know, I didn't really think my kids are doing okay. They'll probably be all right. They raised that, you know, but the environment's going to overwhelm a lot of things, you know, environment of, you know, currencies and such, and law and rule and tyranny. So let's go ahead and do this, and then we'll comment on this and kind of be Article 5 thing.
There we go. And by the way, keep in mind net neutrality right now.
Let's talk about it.
Twitter.lrn.fm.
Freedom's the answer. What's the question? You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
From Philadelphia, we expect a declaration of independence.
Our rights are being threatened by a tyrant 3,000 miles away.
Would you tell me, please, Mr. Howard, why should I trade one tyrant 3,000 miles away for 3,000 tyrants 1 mile away? An elected legislature can trample a man's rights as easily as a king can. Mark my words. This war will be fought not on the frontier or on some distant battlefield, but amongst us, among our homes. Our children will learn of it with their own eyes. And the innocent will die with the rest of us.
Yep. And the innocent will die with the rest. I'm trying to avoid this. Do you see a conflict coming in this Constitution Convention call? They're waiting, and it's 2015, and to get ready and time to finish and wrap it up and get all signed out. Here we go. I mean, what do you see is coming? You know, this attitude of just, I'm going to be ruled by this guy down the street or this guy across the street. I mean, what's the freaking difference, you know? So I'm just wondering, you know, how you're seeing this playing out with the news of the day.
Well, the whole idea, the modern idea of having a constitutional convention is just nothing new. They'd like you to think it's new. And different people groups want everybody to, well, it's my idea, you know, to do this, and this is why it's going to be good. But the fact is, if you go back and read Brzezinski's book, I hate to keep picking on this guy. It's not like I just have a thing for him. But if you go back and read Between Two Ages, America's Role in the Technotronic Era, you'll see very clearly in there that he called for a constitutional convention to rearrange the way things are done in America. And at present, America is the only remaining thorn in the side of the global elite. Truly, all around the world, there is no people group in the world like there are freedom-loving Americans in this country. Now, our government has gone over the hill. We know, we recognize that. But the people of our country are the problem right now. They represent a great risk to these, you know, to the global elite. So while they can look at Europe and say, we've got Europe, they look at China and they look at Asia, we got that. You know, they look at Africa, say, that's total off the wall there. They're in complete control. And they look at America and they say, well, the government kind of, you know, has got things under control in a sense, but there's all these people out there that keep talking about liberty and freedom and unalienable rights and, you know, the Declaration of Independence. They're still hung up on that old document. And in their minds, what they must do in order to get rid of us is just to wipe those documents off the slate as if they never existed.
And start with a new one. What you were talking about reminded me, and I went and looked. You just put Constitution for the New States of America. Is this familiar to you?
Absolutely.
Now, tell us the history of that. When I first came across this, this was a, you know, what was it, Ford Foundation, Rockefeller, kind of whatever, and they go, here's for this new Constitution. They turned the Bill of Rights into privileges granted by the government, and they actually proposed this. I mean, this, they already got it written. Yeah. So, I mean, you'll tell us what you know about this. It's been a long time.
At the very least, this represents the concept that their thinking in their mind has to happen. Whether it's that exact document or not, you know, that's probably immaterial. But you've seen documents like this that have been written by these people that have total disdain for, you know, for the last 250 years that we've had in this country, the so-called American experiment. They completely just sweep that aside as immaterial, irrelevant, whatever, and they still want to get rid of it.
Okay, let me go ahead and go with that. I'm looking, I remember this. God, this is a long time since we had this. Preamble, Constitution for the New States of America. Now, this is backed by these very people that you're talking about, right?
Yes.
Okay, preamble. So that we may join in common endeavors, welcome the future in good order, and create an adequate and self-repairing government, we the people do establish the new states of America, herein provided to be ours, whoever ours is, and do ordain this Constitution, whose supreme law it shall be until the time prescribed for it shall have run, whatever that means. Okay, now, it's rights and responsibilities. Okay, it's not a Bill of Rights. Responsibility. So let's go Section 1. I just want to read 1. Just tell you right there. And I'm sure there's no guns in here. There you go. 1. Freedom of expression, of communication, of movement, of assembly, or of petition shall not be abridged except in declared emergency. Okay? And I'm going, well, that's all I need to know right there. Do I even need to go any further? You see my point?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, this is the heart and soul of Agenda 21 and all of the sustainable development mantra. And that is, everybody has to do their best for the common good. You know, the only rights they have, they don't really have any personal rights. The only rights they have is the right to support the quote-unquote common good or the greater good. Well, okay, so who decides what the greater good is?
Your betters! I rule you. You know why? Because I can. You know, it's an attitude. It's not really they, them, those that we got to go. They're taking advantage of, I think, human beings' good nature. Yeah. You know, if we were just, you know, understand, be more skeptical of people or not being less lazy. I mean, I really think that people would, they act in what they perceive to be their best interest. They just need to understand economics. They need to understand what's going on. And I appreciate your work. That's why I was so adamant about getting you hooked up with Richard Grove. And he knew of you. A lot of your research has been part of, he just didn't know how to get hold, found, kind of go, oh, heck yeah. So I'm glad you guys hooked up. Are you guys going to be doing a lengthy interview, I hope?
Well, we haven't talked person to person yet. We've communicated by email so far, but we're getting there.
Yes. No, I want it done. I want to pimp that immensely. So we'll get you on record. I really like the quality of his work. And it's just, and you saw what he did with NSA's Bill Benny. And I learned a lot from that. I saw the 3-hour director cut. And I'm like, wow, man, there's so much stuff here. But as these people start to learn of your work and you get to meet with them and start, it's a lot of gray haired guys are starting to come to the conclusion. I've spent 30 years in an organization helping them do stuff I didn't really know what I was doing. It's all compartmentalized. And now as they come out in the world, they're going, ah. Well, you kind of saw the beginnings of this. When you did trilaterals over Washington, how was it received by policymakers or Congress? They're sprinting wanting to be one? Or did they, you know, start trying to do opposition? They get crushed? I mean, what was the effect of your research?
There was a lot of opposition that grew up out of that. And I could tell some interesting stories even on how George Bush got bounced out of the primary, GOP primary down in Florida because of our book. But what happened at the capstone of my career back then, if you will, was an interview with Larry King in Washington, D.C., Mutual Broadcasting Radio. And the executive director of the Trilateral Commission sat right across from me. We had a nose-to-nose, point-counterpoint debate for 3 hours.
Okay, wait a minute. You got a guy admitted, I'm Trilateral Commission. It's 10 years later or whenever, and they're saying, no, that never happened, a conspiracy? How is that even possible?
We did. It was the most fantastic 3 hours I ever spent in my life. But here's the thing. The next day, B. Dalton Bookseller called us up and said, I don't know what you said on the radio last night, but people are calling from all over the country wanting your book. Let's get rocking with a stocking order. And I sent him some books, and a week, 10 days later, nothing happened. I called him back and said, hey, man, what's going on? And they said, well, we decided not to carry your book. And they sent it furthermore. They sent out a memo to every cotton picking store in America saying that the publisher's out of business and the book is out of print. And when people called in, that's the message they got. And we then, of course, found out that the parent company of B. Dalton Booksellers had a member on his board of directors who was also a member of the Trilateral Commission. Can you put that together?
Shocking.
Shocking.
You know, I'm what? Well, and then what happened? I mean, then the campaign was shut Patrick up.
We would have sold, we probably would have sold 500,000 books instead of 75,000 books. It would have made a huge difference in the country.
Did they misread? A lot of times, these guys will come out and say, yeah, we'll do it well, and we got shiny ties, and, we took baths and everything, and look at my expensive suit, and you want me to rule you, right? I mean, they were so, their ego was so inflated, and their world perception was so bad that they thought that they could just come out and be open about this, and it would be embraced, and they found through your book and the conversations on Larry King and so on, that it wasn't, and they made the decision to go more secret. Is that kind of what happened, you think?
Well, it is. They just kind of like a submarine, They said, dive, dive, and they went underwater. And
dive, 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 dive! Patrick Woods got a beat on us. Okay. All right, well, hold on a second. I want to talk to you a little bit more, but I tell you, whatever I can do to encourage you to go, and a lot of people in your position, it's a merchant, it's a next way, it's the technology that I want to support for the Bitcoin Summit that we're having on March 14th. And this is, we have some experts in the field and just a lot of volunteers that are in a workshop in the afternoon, is to walk you through the entire process. One, we understand the technology. Two, we understand the political and philosophical ramifications of that technology, which, a couple minutes from you would help. And then we have, now we just get down to business and start, setting up an account just to set it there, get some. It'll be worth a gazillion someday. All right, there we go. Are you hearing anything in the background?
No.
Okay. Yeah, some it does and some it doesn't. Depends what country you're from. All right. This is, please put that on. Donna will send you a reminder, you and Dave both. And yeah. I thought of you, and I'm glad, that's one reason why I wanted to have you on this week, is because I thought of you because everything that you were talking about and the mechanism by which they could do this is blockchain technology.
Yeah.
It makes it possible. And any kind of security, other than that, it's going to have to be some central point and nobody gives a crap and doesn't trust them anyway. But this is going to be a little algorithm, a little change of a feed of how it's based on the currency of this one number and whatever index. It's consumer price inflation index. I mean, it's like, we'll just change that number. Because I know it's just dials and switches, man. So I'm going, all right. So if you'll participate in that, that would be awesome because I think it would benefit all of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that would be good. I'd like to learn a little bit more and meet some of the people involved anyway.
Don't cost you nothing. I mean, if you want to eat lunch, $25. If you want to buy Bitcoin, $25. You want some trinkets and trash, whatever. But just to go and be there and say, yo, what's up? Nada. So you might get hungry, but this is going to be a lot of the people that need to be exposed to you, and you need to be exposed to them. It's what I do. Peace.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, listen, if you get a chance, as you go on, mention the National Town Hall on Technocracy.
Oh, I apologize. I meant to. I got it right here in front of me, but we have it in the archive, and we got it up on the front page of Freedom's Phoenix.
Okay, that's fine.
So we've been putting it in our email dispatch that we do. We've been putting that out, and we've still got the archive here. Let's go ahead and give that out. Let me put this in here. Okay, National Town on Technocracy, Patrick Wood, author of Technocracy Rising, and Aaron Ryan, host of We the People Radio, are leading a two-hour National Town Hall meeting to discuss the content of technocracy rising the Trojan horse of global transformation, and what can be done to reject technocracy in our nation. The microphone will be passed to callers who have actually read Technocracy Rising to ensure a lively and focused discussion. There will be also be live chat window available during the program. Everyone is invited to listen in. You know, this is interesting. You're doing it March 1st from noon to 2. I imagine, is that Arizona time or California time? Or
California time.
Okay, so Pacific, 12, noon to 2 in the afternoon, March 1st. Now, March 1st, is that a Saturday?
It's a Sunday.
Sunday. Okay, Sunday. And yeah. Where the radio internet, you can go to wethepeopleradio.us out of Redding, California. You know, this is, I'm wondering, you know, with the technology now of the archive and all, and of course, we'll, from that show, we get a link to it. We'll definitely put that up too, and then you'll have it. I would hope that they're archiving. So the main thing is that the audience that you got with Larry King, if this takes off and people need this information and you're having this a two-hour program with people that actually read the book, I'm wondering if you would have more effect or more listeners or more targeted demographic to this show than you would even the Larry King thing.
Possibly so.
Technology's changed, man. See, we also get some favor. When the internet was going, did you see that as a, you know, what was going that was going to become with the people being able to communicate? Was that on your radar screen?
Well, things just kind of happened back then. You know, it wasn't that I kind of planned everything out the way it happened. I got a call out of the blue to be on Larry King's show. I never tried to get on myself. You know, but they had enough people called him up and said, you got to have this guy on. They did. So,
well, I'm looking for the internet itself. Did you, as being someone that was in technology and covering technology, did you go, this internet thing is going to be a problem? Well, it's going to be a solution? What?
No, it's been an incredible solution for us in the meantime. I mean, everything you're doing would not be possible without the internet. It really wouldn't. And me too. I'd have no audience right now if it wasn't for the internet. But on the other hand, now that the internet has become so successful and such a threat to the people, in the establishment, now they're pushing for net neutrality. And the thing that just scares me to death is if Obama is successful in getting these regulations put through, it will give him a kill switch for the entire internet in the United States.
There is
Think about that, because if he ever declared a national emergency for some reason or whatever, and said the internet is going to be turned off summarily, tune in your television to see it, CNBC or whatever for news, that would put virtually everybody like you and me, and I mean just a jillion other industries out of business. Can you imagine what would happen to Amazon, for Pete's sake, if they lost the internet for even a week? It would just slaughter them.
Well, this is there's some things that you should know that we, our technology, we keep right on the edge on what we do here.
Yeah,
there is. I can show you. You got a pen and paper. I'm just going to have you do some search and look at some stuff, and you'll see from my perspective that it's over, man. I mean, they are not going to be able to stop. You know, everything goes somewhere, and I go everywhere. I mean, you can't stop the signal. You know,
yeah.
The write down this YouTube, the Outernet, and you need also another item you need to do is Iridium. You know, I tell you what, I'm going to put this on the archive, so you can see this. Just go to your show here in a few hours, and I'll have Donna put this up. Outernet, let's see, what's the other one? You know, Lantern, what's some of the other stuff? And I'll go ahead and have this up there, because I need you to understand how all of these problems that they're going to shut off, there are people replacements like Bitcoin, blockchain technology. There is new meshes. When you did, they did a Kickstarter. You familiar with Kickstarters? You know, these different things. They did a thing called CubeSats. And these, they put up like 30 at a time. They're, you know, the power in one cell phone is now what Telstar was in a freaking school bus. I mean, you know, so they're launching the entire constellations in one shot from SpaceX rockets. And they're sitting up there and they're 3D mapping the entire surface of the Earth every day now, And this is like, funded, you know, by people. You know, they're going to the moon. They're doing all kinds of stuff. Well, a lot of this also allows for, that got turned on last August, for the ability to have your own global mesh internet and totally outside of DARPA. So if they turn it off, I'm like, go ahead. And that's why we were such, we did a big deal in June of 04 on Spaceship One, Government Zero, when they had the first civilian launched in the space. We're going, well, I know what that means. It means we can put up our own satellites. Technology got satellites smaller. Technology got, you know, putting in space cheaper. And all of a sudden, here we go. So I'm not so worried about, they'll do this, and all it'll do is just prove our point. I see that this battle of technology, the very people that they need to do it and install. I remember in the late 80s, early 90s, certainly in the 90s, they had all these hacker different conventions of whatever, and DEF CON, blah, 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 and they were just doing interviews. These were auditions by some 13-year-old to go work for the FBI, you know? So as they did this, to be able to have these capacities, you have new technology and new people, and they're less and less going into the government. They're goodwill hunting, man. They're like, I'm hunting for not working for the NSA. So what do you do with these people? And then all of a sudden, boom, Bill Binney and these guys, they said, hey, man, we're whistleblowing. What happens to them? So that produces Edward Snowden. You know, so I don't see them winning this. It's going to get messy, but I just want you to be aware. Just check when Donna sends you the archive. Just take a look in the third hour, and I'll have some of the links there, just videos for you to watch. It'll take you, I don't know, some of them are 3 minutes, 5 minutes. You get through that, and you'll go, holy crap, I had no idea. So yeah, this is technology overcoming whatever the heck they're doing on a global scale. So yeah, I'm hopeful, but we definitely need to know what you know, and yes, have the blockchain and these people and the, you know, leave me aloneists that are coming up with this technology, the threat from your side. And I'd really be interested in doing another show after that to talk about, after you digest it a little bit, what your opinion is.
Yeah, sure. That'd, you know, be cool. That'd be good.
I think that'd be awesome. Plus, it's a good place to, you know, demonstrate, to show that this book exists. Do you have any copies of Trilaterals Over Washington left? Do those even exist?
No, they don't. There's a few on Amazon, used copies. They're really expensive, though, like, I saw one for like $350 the other day.
Yeah.
Plus, I wish I could get that much. But well, I am in the process of putting it back up. I'm going to republish the books on Amazon and through CreateSpace. I'll hopefully even get a Kindle version of it. So I'm looking to do that in the next 2 or 3 months. I think enough people have asked for it now that I wouldn't make a lot of money on it, but I'll make, you know, I'll get my investment back for sure.
No, I they're more than you think. I mean, I tell you what's really popular now. They have a lot of people just bailing on the system all over the world, is they're making livings at a pretty good price of doing audiobooks, of reading books,
yes,
and giving you the file.
Right.
And we have, and fortunately, you have a good presentation and voice. You do it your damn self, you know. So I'm, is that on the drawing board? You think you might an audiobook?
Yeah, that's also the audiobook.
Well, I'm waiting on you now. I mean, come on, man. What am I waiting on here? You can read.
I know. You know what? It's just right now, the front end load to this, getting this book really launched right, is just, it's a little bit, maybe a little bit more than what I expected it would be, but it's something I absolutely have to go through. And, you know, I put out the feelers for radio shows and stuff, and, you know, they're coming in left and right from all over the country. I've even done one in Europe and one in Australia already, for peace sake. But, you know, the shows are coming in. I want to talk to people about this and get people involved in the public. They're not rushing en masse to buy the book yet, but, you know, the reviews that are up on Amazon so far, there's 17, I think, today, every one of them is a 5-star review with the strongest recommendation for people to read this book right away.
And what is included from the first two books, then? Give me a summary of, just skip to the end, you know, and it kind of, you know, do I have to read the other two books to get the full benefit?
No, I say enough in this book to bring people up to speed on where these people have come from. And the first two books, if nothing else at this point, show the pattern and the attitude of these people. The pattern and the attitude.
What is the attitude? Yeah, you deserve to be ruled because you're letting us? I mean, what is it?
It's paternalistic. they really believe that they have the answers to everybody's problem. And, like a paternalistic attitude, well, be a good little boy, Johnny, and just do what we say. And most of these people have PhDs. You got to understand, either they're billionaires or they have PhDs. And the kiss of death in that industry is when you get your PhD, all of a sudden you're God. You're God and everybody else a peon because you know so much more than everybody else.
Now you know how to follow freaking instructions, know who your betters are.
Yeah. So, I saw that attitude over and over. And when I debated Charles Heck on Larry King, and Larry King was a flaming liberal even back then, you realize. And when that show was over, it was only supposed to be 1 hour. It ended up being three because he just cleaned his slate. He called the other guests and said, look, we just have to reschedule you. This is just blowing up. It's incredible. And by the time the show was done and I left, Larry King shaked our hands. He looked at me and he said, I have never seen anything like this in my life. And that's the last thing he said. I never heard from him again.
And he never will again if they have anything to do with it.
I'll tell you something. This is a little tidbit that's kind of funny. I got a call from Tom Hartman, T-H-O-M Hartman. I don't know if you know who he is.
Yeah, he's kind of a progressive talk show host.
He's the Rush Limbaugh of the progressive world, right? Mm-hmm. He's on RT Network. And he's in Washington, D.C. Right down the hall from his office is Larry King's office. And Larry King is also broadcasting on RT right now. That's his big venue, right? And I thought it just ironic that Tom Hartman had me on. I'm just hoping they talk in the hall and say, hey, I had this idiot on the other day. And, some conspiracy dude. Well, who was that, man? Oh, his name was Pat Wood.
Well, I have a way to get hold of Larry King. I've never even asked him to come on some other issues on this free and open election thing through Christina Tobin, and he kind of did that third party thing. So I got a way to contact. Is that something you would like to go on Larry King again? Have you made the attempt?
If I had a way to challenge him again, I would just. I'm sure he remembers back to that interview. I'm absolutely positive. I would be interested in him orchestrating the same interview today.
Ooh.
Get somebody in the studio. Let's put the camera on them. Let's go nose to nose, point counterpoint. Let them bring their big guns. I'll bring my big guns, and we'll just lay it out on the table and let the people decide.
Do me a favor. If Donna sends this to you, send me this challenge, the guy's name, what year it was, Larry King, blah, 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 because I know I can get a hold of Todd Hartman also, but include that link to that show. So because when my years over at Air America and dealing with these guys and backing on, we know and contacts and producers up. So you go ahead and just give me this, I'd like to in the challenge of, and it would be nice or something. And I can get that to the, I'll make the attempt. I might have, maybe a percent, a little better chance of you to hook it up. But let me make the effort. I might be able to do something, but just send that to me and I'll see what I can do. Cause that'd be awesome.
Yeah, it would be the challenge of the century, wouldn't it? It really would.
I doubt that they'd be willing to do it, or maybe they are. They're looking for this Article 5 thing. They have been pushing this for forever. We even did an initiative here in Arizona in '94, bringing attention to this and calling BS on it. What we did is we go, all right. The initiative was very simple. And we had a newspaper then called Citizens Taking Initiative and whatever, and hundreds of thousands of issues, copies of that. We just had a good time. What the initiative said is all calls, past, present, future, are to be rescinded and stricken from the record. We ever even called from state Arizona, something like that. And they freaked the F out, man. It was all hell no. And it was the American Legislative Exchange Council that led to fight on this. It got passed in committee and it went in to the drawer. It was a pocket veto by the president of the Senate at the time. And we're going, what the hell is going on? Well, it was the John Birch and the East Valley Mormons and so on. All of a sudden it became, they go, what? They don't want to save the country. Who is behind? I go, you need to find out who got him to pocket veto that. I mean, that's the story, is who said don't do it. Well, as they researched and all of a sudden it became damn, these John Birch guys are right. They're trying to take over. This is, and I go, yeah, you know, this is, they want, and this is the reasoning they gave.
Yeah.
If we don't have the threat of a constitutional convention to curtail spending, then the Democrats won't be afraid enough to do some budget, blah, 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 BS. I'm going, seriously, that's the best argument you can come up with? There was, to them, it was just any BS and something, a threat of legitimacy of why, and but if you do, we're going to shoot you. I mean, it became very obvious to people here in Arizona, because in Florida, they rescinded it, and then in Nevada, they rescinded it and expunged a record that they ever asked for it. Well, Alec goes in, they say, well, you can't do that. And they go, do what? I don't know what you're talking about. Then Colorado did some stuff. And so, but now it's another, this is being resurrected to do this again. And it's the same thing. It's this Constitution for the New States of America thing. What do you know about that? What was the atmosphere that was presented? Where'd that come from?
Oh, boy. My brain is overtaxed right now.
Well, we can. You know, people can just look it up. I'll put the link to it. Let me write that down. Yeah. Link to the.
I wanted to just on the ConCon idea. I wanted to point you to page 42 in my book. You have a copy of the book, right?
Yeah, I'm looking at it.
Page 42. Is it 42? No. Well, actually, it's the last line on page 42, and then at the top of page 43.
Yeah.
This is footnoted. This is out of Brzezinski's Between Two Ages.
Okay, let me go ahead and read it. The approaching 200th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence could justify the call for a national constitutional convention to re-examine the nation's formal institutional framework. Either 1976 or 1989, the 200th anniversary of the Constitution, could serve as a suitable target date, culminating a national dialogue on the relevance of existing arrangements. Realism, however, forces us to recognize that the necessary political innovation will not come from direct constitutional reform, desirable as that would be. The needed change is more likely to develop incrementally and less overtly, in keeping with the American tradition of blurring distinctions between public and private institutions.
Okay, there you go. You can go get Brzezinski's book on the internet if you don't already have it. There is a scanned copy of it out there, and you can find the quote yourself and read it. But there's the earliest call that I can find for Constitution Convention right there. Brzezinski did it.
And that was from his, what, 70 book?
That was in 1970.
Yeah, no, you're damn tinfoil hat wearing conspiracy, you know? I mean, you just, but it keeps coming out. All right. Well, is there anything else you want to include in the archive here?
Oh, I don't think so. It was great, great stimulating interview.
Well, I always enjoy talking. You really opened my eyes on a lot of things as a young activist that I was exposed with or to, but it was never detailed to me where a lot of this research came from. I never heard of the Larry King thing. I never heard of your original books. It was always somebody would take what you had to say and kind of shoehorning it into whatever the hell they wanted to do, you know. Yeah. And I'd see all the charts and all that kind of and this and kind of, and it was obvious for people that were paying attention that this was going on. But, you know, they controlled the media so much and the credibility and all they do, anything they'd say about it was that you were crazy until they celebrated them doing it to you, you know. So I'm really glad that you got resurrected in this and we know about you. But how is it that you were so secret for so long? I mean, to me, I mean, how, I mean, now we're hoping to expose this more and I'm glad I can help, but I mean, how was it that you were not more prominent in this before? What happened?
Well, there was nothing more to say after about 1981, when after Reagan got elected, nobody cared about the Trilateral Commission. They really didn't. And there was just a long period of time in there. I watched them. I watched the parade go by, but nobody cared. The conservatives didn't care. Liberals certainly didn't care. Nobody cared. After Reagan got elected, I could hardly sell a single book. It was just amazing. It's almost like somebody was stealing my mail out of the post office box.
Why? Because they thought it's solved. We feel good about America now. Well, Ronnie's going to take care of it. What?
They thought Reagan would save the day, and you know that the world is going to be saved. And after 8 years of Reagan and with Bush as his vice president, we were worse off than we ever were before under Carter. But the other thing, there was nothing more for me to say than what I already said in Trilaterals Over Washington until I discovered technocracy. When I discovered technocracy, that changed everything.
Well, you mean discovered it. I thought that's what your book was, you know, kind of based on Between Two Ages.
That's what this book is about. Tony Sutton and I had no clue that there was something called technocracy in the 1930s. We never heard of it.
Oh, so you mean the whole concept philosophy that was behind this?
When they said they're going to create a new international economic order, we thought it was just going to be some rehash of Keynesian economics. That's what we thought. But we didn't have anything else to compare it to. But when I discovered technocracy and saw it build as a as an economic system to replace capitalism, the thought just went bang in my brain. Could that be what the new international economic order was? New? And I went back and read Brzezinski's book. It's a rehash of 1930s technocracy, the technotronic era. Technotronic is just a knockoff for the word technocratic. It's the same stuff. I compared policies side by side, thoughts, you know, concepts and policies side by side all the way through Brzezinski's book. He came from Columbia University, where technocracy was embedded in the 1930s. Some of those old technocrats were even still alive at Columbia when Brzezinski wrote the book.
Wow.
So, you know, I thought, okay, what have they done? You know, forget what they said. What have they done that would indicate that technocracy is what's on their mind? When I started coming across, for instance, the thing that really did this for me, by the way, was the Brundtland Commission, that was the UN Commission in 1987, that was chaired by Gro Brundtland. That the book that was produced out of that conference called Our Common Future. That book was hailed by the 1992 Rio Conference as being the singular work that paved the way for Agenda 21. That was what the United Nations said about it.
Wow.
Gro Brundtland was a member of the Trilateral Commission.
What was the name of this book?
Our Common Future. You can get it on Amazon. It's still being published. And when I tell you what, when I saw that, I said, bingo, connection made. This is their baby from the get-go.
Where would I find the UN comment on this book? I mean, I'd like to put links up to that and that comment.
Just go search for it. Search for United Nations Brundtland Commission.
Brundtland. Spell
or
it for me.
Agenda 21 and Brundtland. Brundtland. It's a mind blower. But I bring that up in the book as well. Somewhere, you can look in the index, you'll find Brundtland. Go get a reference to it there. But I'll tell you what, when I saw that, my eyes just went bonkers. You know, I couldn't, I was shaking. I was like, you know, my heart was going bump, 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 like this for about a week.
You know, one thing I share with people, the Arizona Breakfast Club was, it kind of really had its heyday about the time you were doing this because, you know, didn't have the internet. Once the internet hit, it's, you know, the attendance started going down and so on. Then we took it over and it just, you know, started expanding again because you still need to, you know, meet sometimes. But yeah. There was a... Damn it, I was going to, you know, I had a thought I wanted to share with you, and I forgot what it was. Nah, whatever. Damn it, there's so much stuff to do here.
Well, I spoke there several times.
Oh, no, I know what it was. I know what it was. It was a gentleman that came in after the fall of Russia, the Soviet Union, and he came in and he talked and he goes, and he said this. He goes, the green movement is the socialist next flagship. And he goes, it's just a mechanism by which, you know, the watermelon, you know, green on the outside, red in the middle, you know, kind of deal. And he goes, do you know what happened to Gorbachev? And he gave this presentation, and I've used this in several things, tell people, and they kind of get blown away by this. You know, where did Mikhail Gorbachev go? All of a sudden, the Soviet Union's done. Where'd he go? Well, all of a sudden, he's in at the Presidio. They turned it into a private office complex, a military base. He gets an office there and starts the Green Cross. Well, the Green Cross was adopted into the United Nations that became part of this, you know, whole thing in Rio, and here we go. So the Soviet Union didn't lose. They just get reimagined.
Yeah, you're right.
So,
yeah.
So this Green Cross thing, was that kind of the genesis of a lot of, or was used by a lot of these guys?
Oh, it was. You know, Gorbachev became best friends with Bill Clinton. I don't know why they didn't make him a member of the Trilateral Commission, honestly. But Gorbachev's been up to his eyeballs in this stuff ever since he left the Soviet Union. Just totally incredible.
Well, you know, as the more it used to be the Green Cross, if you just search, it was kind of its own thing. And then it just kind of got morphed in and it's just UN.
Well, it is. And it has been. And he is he's been involved in a lot more things besides just that. He was involved with the Rockefellers. He's been involved with the Earth Charter, you know, creating the Earth Charter. I mean, this guy's got he's got a litany as long as your arm. Stuff he's done.
Well, what about these are all the old guards? You know, are all the guys that had. You know, one day it'll be Putin with his gazillion $billion and doing personal something. But the thing is I'm going. Where's the new blood? I mean, is it just money going down through these different interests? That because I know it here. I mean, I know a lot of the guy. I'll have them on the show. Different political fund, whatever. They're just functionaries of my job. Was at a high school. I wore a tie and conservative and went to the camp of I went to this college and got this degree. Went to Cato and then the Goldwater and this institute of the whatever, and now I'm in charge and a functionary of AstroTurf getting crowds for the people running campaigns on the issue of Article 5 convention. I mean, I just see this progression of these guys. They started off young. They're feeling like they're getting, they got sucked in. This is their life now. Whether they know what role they're playing or not is not the point. They got to pay the mortgage, okay? So these guys are just the insulation and the workhorses, but the philosophy, I don't think they embrace it as much or have this elitist mentality. It's just their job. But the people that hire them and the people that are behind this, I'm wondering if there is a new cadre or a replacement of generation next of them passing it on to what? Their children's? Well, I've had guys on that I was at the Bilderberger and I do, and I'm the next generation of we're revolting against and we don't like our dad and grandpa anymore.
You know?
So is there a new generation taking this on, or we're just waiting for Kissinger and presenting all these guys to die off?
No, there isn't a generation that's being handpicked to be part of the Trilateral Commission now that will carry the torch. And people like some of the younger people, John Podesta is one of them. He's a snake in the grass in Washington. He's 65, but that's young compared to Kissinger. Then you've got a guy became a member a couple of years ago was Eric Schmidt.
You know, Google.
Can you believe that? The chairman of Google. Okay.
I'm so shocked. You know, well, this is one thing that came out of did you read the Julian Assange piece in Newsweek about Eric Schmidt?
Yeah, I did.
that hell, Google might as well be the State Department. I mean, they are a State Department.
I know. They've got very close ties.
close ties. Hell, they are. Fascism. You know, you get the mix between government and corporation to the point you can't tell the difference. That's the definition. So I'm just going, yep, here we go. So I'm wondering, it's going to be technology that it really gives us any and a distributed use of the technology and the right just awareness and attitude of people. And that's one thing that Richard Grove and I used to, you know, battle back and forth on this. He was very much about exposing these guys and having a good understanding of the kind of work and a lot of stuff you do as a source for him. And he wanted people to understand and see the connections over generate. Have you seen his brain, the brain on his site?
Yeah, I looked at it pretty carefully. It's interesting.
Yeah, no, see, this kind of work, you got this technology, and people like that. He was an SEC whistleblower. You know, to have this kind of stuff available, all of a sudden I'm like, wow, we have a chance? But it doesn't matter if people don't have the right philosophy or understand what makes this country prosperous or human beings being prosperous. So I don't really care. I just want to have the technical ability and certainly I don't know if I need to be allowed. I mean, where they can't stop me. I'm just going to communicate and do whatever. And that's why on Freedom's Phoenix, in the background, we have been working, especially in the last 7-8 months, really hard on creating the infrastructure to be on a distributed internet where it's kind of like Napster. You know, it's like you piece. I'm going to, let me mark that down. I'll show you what we're doing. And I will send that to you. So you'll understand how we're going to create an entity that they can't shut down. It's impossible. There is no central server. It's distributed over a distributed network. So as we're developing that and the different tools for using that and incorporating Bitcoin into it, it provides a template for people to not worry about what laws they pass. Because all the stuff that you're doing is by force or threat of force that they're going to be able to implement a lot of this stuff. And I'm like, oh, I didn't even know, didn't pay attention, don't care. And it doesn't make a difference anyway. You would get that point, which is one reason why I want you to go to Pi Day, the Bitcoin Summit .info. Hey, thanks for spending the extra time with me. I think we can make a lot of, you know, with your work and others, and that's kind of, I'm at 53. I'm kind of the bridge between Generation Next and, you know, the older guys that knew what was going on. And you can start stitching and hook you guys up that I'm going, yeah, this is, it's not even a generational thing. It's an ideological thing. And that's what the internet has done, is put us together.
Yeah, it does. You're right. I tell people my two-minute elevator speech, I tell people how much I love technology, and I really do. I grew up on technology. The stock market was the earliest user of technology anywhere. So I grew up in it. From the time I got out of college, I was just steeped in it. And I love technology, and I tell people, you know, I'm not anti-technology any way, shape, or form. But I love technology when it serves me. If I have to serve technology, I don't like that at all. You know, if technology tells me, well, you need to do what I say, oh, no, I'm sorry, I'm not going to do that. I want technology to serve me, and that's what this is all about in the end. They want to use technology to get you to serve them. That's it, period, end of subject. Do you want to serve them? Do you want to be forced to serve them?
Well, as long as I get my Facebook account, maybe.
Some people are going to say that. Well, as long as I can do this, and this. And say, well, what's going to happen when they cancel your Facebook, you know, your account because you posted a picture that was perfectly good and, you know, and they just canceled. And that happens to people, by the way.
No. I've got lots of stories.
Oh, they go nuts. You know, they go, oh, you know, I hate Facebook. You know, I'm done with social media. And then three weeks later, they're back again.
What they do is they say, do you agree? You totally agree? Oh, yeah. I got to put this one. Humans. You know, what I'm going to do is if you'll, I'll just put it on there and say, look, you know, this, you know, for Patrick to get caught up, you know, and a lot of other people will look at it too, and it'll be good. It's just, it's hard for me to take all the stuff that I've been, and you know how it is. I'm sure you go through the same thing. Of all the things that you know, it's like you got to write a book, and I got to write a book. And there are other books that kind of do this, like The Rational Optimist and Abundance by Diamandis, and you know, there's some other things that are out there saying, look, man, there's a lot of stuff coming that will empower the individual. But there's enormous infrastructure that's created to control us at every level for everything. And it's, I don't want to do this in the Fed thing because I just don't care. I just want to be able to ignore the Fed. And that technology is available, but it's the same technology that they were hoping, wishing for, praying for, and got to enact your carbon credit energy kind of whatever thing, you know, the Goldman Sachs coin kind of deal. So I can see this coming. And you having this tie to history of who these people are, how they did it, the things that they said, that they still are around, they're passing the torch. This battle is being engaged now. And for us to hook up these two generations and the understanding and the fog of the 90s, and it certainly was certainly mostly the 90s, there was this fog thing going on, you know, and I'm going, all right, here we go. So I, if I can enlist your help, or we can help you, and we can get everybody all educated, I'm in, man. Let me know how we can do it.
Yep, I'm doing it. I'll tell you, and honestly, I'm doing it for my kids and grandkids. They right now, they could care less.
Right.
You know, they won't read my book. I'm sure they won't. But they're still my kids and grandkids.
No, I'm hip. I say that all the time. This is not about me. And they don't even got to really worry about me. They got to worry about my kids and grandkids, you know, because that generation just coming up with it, even because I didn't press it. When my kids were in high school, you know, when they were younger, they helped folding this and passing out that and doing whatever, but mail stuff, and kind of they got involved. But once they started, you know, the hormones started flowing and, you know, challenging the man, you know, I'm just like, hey, peace out, man. Just get involved in school, whatever, don't care. But they understand. understood, and it by osmosis, it stuck. Like all my six grandchildren from all my kids, they're none of them are vaccinated. You know, they did that on their own. They just decided, yeah, we're not going to, you know. And I so feel so much more comfortable. They're so bright and intelligent and wide-eyed and open. And I see so many people, they go through all these, how many shots can they give them? And it's just the light in their eyes just start to go away, you know. And I just feel so sad, and I don't know what else to do, but at least we got it covered, and that's my motivation too, Patrick. Thanks for coming on. I appreciate this, and we'll go ahead and work together as we can. Just let me know when we can.
Yeah, that's cool. I'll see you on Pi Day.
Thank you. Thank you, Patrick. Bye-bye.
Take care.